What is up? It is Tuesday night. It's time for Inside the Game. And happy birthday to Greg Indra Fields.
Happy birthday, man.
Episode 50.
How do you follow that up?
Happy birthday for this year, Indra. I got together with the whole fucking internet, man. Like, we all got together and we all collectively decided that everyone was going to say your name properly for this year. And if they don't, then everyone has a license to kill. Yes. If he doesn't, he's dead. Okay. So let's see if we can make it happen. Okay. Another year.
If you can get Dan to hold of that, then it's like the best birthday gift I've ever received. I don't believe
everyone start working on Artosis, man. We're going to do it.
He still
every time we tell him.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
He's proud of it. It's his thing. Yeah.
Every time we tell him, he goes, "No, fuck that. I'm a caster. I have the power. I tell him what his name is, not the other way around."
Yep.
I'm actually being serious. It's awesome. That's what Dan said.
Damn him. Yeah, welcome to Inside the Game, episode 50, as Indra tweeted so eloquently. We got special guest pain user joining us.
I was held hostage down under.
Oh shit, you guys. Oh god. It's like I brought pictures of a dead family member to a funeral. I just realized that X6 is still on the the show slate. Pain.
You want to address that or what?
God, dude.
So, you can talk about that too.
I mean, yeah, we can start things off on a negative note. X6 definitely disbanded, but I think for reasons kind of highlighted in the Team Liquid article and the interview, but mostly because management was having issues signing Sleep and Suppy. Suppy obviously switched over to EG. Sleep disbanded as well. So I think that ultimately ended up in them not really being able to land any major sponsors, which is what they wanted to do for a while. They had some mid-tier sponsors, but yeah, things did not end well. As a caster and being like the team's official caster, I'm not like ultimately that broken up about it. It's going to suck not to attend US events for a little bit, but I don't have any doubt that I'll eventually find another team here in the near future, but
Team Mom.
I think I might just chill for a while, just kind of lie solo for a little bit, take it easy on the team thing until I'm either competing again or like I really have a serious reason to join a team, or unless I find a team that just I really want to join for some reason.
Yeah. Right on, great.
Let me. I'm just asking because this is some of the stuff that was asked, and I don't have an opinion on this. So I just want to know what you think.
Shoot.
It's like as much disclaimer as I can possibly give before.
You can be as politically correct as you would like.
I found it interesting that some of the discussion was had that Check 6 was one of the first teams to do something that I personally think is actually a good idea for what we would call like mid-tier teams, and I hope that's not upsetting anyone that Check 6 would be regarded that way, but they signed Julia, they signed yourself and HD, and obviously you guys were non-traditional signees in the sense that you weren't purist players.
It was for PR purposes.
Right. So the question I have for you is some of the reason, like one of the rocks that got unturned when the team did actually go under was that people were saying, well, if Check 6 had a different business model and was focusing like only on players and that kind of crap, then they would have been fine. For you, as a guy who falls into that category, like, do you agree with that business model that they put forward? Do you think it was a forward-thinking good thing? What do you think about that?
I agree with you in the sense that from a business perspective, it's a really good idea. I think they could have done a much better job marketing said personalities and putting them out there.
Problem that a lot of teams have.
Absolutely. I think EG definitely does that the best out of all the teams right now, and I think all the other teams are kind of taking a page out of their book and trying to catch up in that regard. But yeah, I think it was a good idea. And as far as from Check 6 standpoint, I mean, HD wasn't even on the payroll. I was something on the order of like 200 a month, and just going to events in the US when I wanted to. Like if I felt like attending and making an appearance, I would. So it was really no cost to them, and I was still representing the team at the same time, so they could focus most of their budget on the players. And I think they had the budget. It was just a matter of kind of like tying everything together and actually signing guys like Suppy and Sleep, who were performing really well. I mean, there's a lot of discussion on the whole Suppy thing as whether or not to sign him after that MLG performance, and he ended up not being signed, and then EG was just like, whoop, there yeah. It is. I mean, and no hate to you guys. I mean, you guys should have picked him up. Suppy's an amazing player, and he's a marketable personality and a good guy on top of that. So, yeah, I think it's a good business model for mid-tier teams. Even top-tier teams, I think it's a good idea to have, like, really talented players that you focus on and then also have personalities that represent the team and the public. I think you just need to find a way to make it work. And management was butting heads in a lot of ways. One of the main managers of the team left right before everything disbanded. So there were things that weren't working on an internal level that couldn't even allow those other things to come to fruition. So,
well, where do you go from here? Like, with your, because you've kind of gone back and forth. I definitely have seen you ebb and flow in out of, like, I'm a full-time caster or I'm playing a lot of StarCraft 2 right now. Do you play StarCraft 2 to feed into your casting, or do you take this kind of as a so that's your next signing is going to be like a, you're definitely still going to be a caster that plays StarCraft, right? And you want
this I'm like, I'll always be a player at heart. I just can't get rid of that itch to compete. You know, I'm sure you can identify with this. Well, you're still competing, but if you stop at some point, I'm sure you'll know exactly what I mean. It's really difficult for me to like not be able to fully commit one way or the other, but the way I see it now is like I'm kind of locked into the casting thing for better or for worse, and I still enjoy it. It's fun. I'm traveling. I'm making money doing it, so I really enjoy those things, and I still am allowed to kind of like live vicariously through all my friends and people that I cast and be a part of the community, so that's really cool too. But yeah. That's pretty much the road I'm headed down right now. Casting's still really fun, and I'm enjoying it, so I'm going to keep doing it. But when Heart of the Swarm comes out, I'm definitely going to take a stab at playing competitively for a little bit. No doubt about it.
If that works out, would you give up casting and go back to competition? Do you enjoy that more?
Yes. But works out in what regard? Like
you're successful enough to not need to cast.
And that
make a go of it as a player.
That would require consistent top 4 to 5 placements, and with the skill pool now compared to where I left, and the skill gap and the leap I would have to make in order to make that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you haven't seen what they're doing to Terran. I don't think.
Why do you think I'm coming back, man? the Warhound is pretty sexy, no doubt about it. But, yeah.
You're just excited for the next iteration. You'll just fly solo then, just chill for a while.
Well, certainly. I mean, until I see, like, the need to be on a team, or if a team has, like, a casting role to fulfill, then, yeah, I'm just gonna hang out for a while. But me and HD might actually be casting for IGN again in the future here, so we might fire that gig up once again, which would be pretty awesome.
Does that have anything to do with Doa leaving?
At the time, there was no need for two sets of casters back when they brought Doa on board, because there just wasn't enough casting and they didn't need that many people on payroll. So now that there is a need for at least two more casters, we're definitely going to revisit that with them and see how that goes. And then obviously we just had our first gig ever with Blizzard. And so we'll see where that leads. Hopefully they'll have us back.
Since like you haven't been around for a while, it's obviously getting the updates and stuff. You on the list of things to chat about was actually we talked about WCS Australia already, obviously, but can you give us the little 1-2 minute, like, this is a summarization of their scene, the people, the fans, etc.?
Dude, I could give you a solid 10 minute, but in the in lieu of time, in one word, it was amazing. Super small community in the corner of the world, opposite hemisphere, but man, were they enthusiastic. Some of the best fans I've come across. It was reminiscent of the early days of MLG when everyone was just going ballistic. A lot of these guys, the ACL guys, huge shout-outs to them, by the way, the Australian Cyber League. They did a phenomenal job with the event.
And Docs is a good man.
Oh, yeah, Docs is awesome. All the other Australian guys are awesome. Huge shout-outs to them, Nick, and the Blizzard guys, PJ and Chris as well. Blizzard actually took phenomenal care of the players and the casters. It was a really well-run event. They had, you know, food for the players. The players were taken care of. Everything was run very smoothly. And the thing that blew me away is when I found out that, like, almost all the ACL guys are working for free. Like, these guys are diehard esports fans. They're working for free, and they're doing a better job than people I know in the American scene that are making, you know, 30.
With better accents, too.
With better accents as well. But yeah, everyone was super happy, super positive. And Nick and Dan were there, obviously. We spent a week hanging out with them. That was really fun. And yeah, in an environment like that, I feel like casting is just so much easier when everything is just running so smoothly. And
well, Paige, let me just say this from those of us that didn't get to go. Just a gigantic fuck you. You know, going to Australia, visiting the zoo.
It was really cool, man.
Fuck you.
I'm sorry I couldn't bring you along.
So jealous. That place looks amazing, man. Yeah.
It was beautiful. We were staying like right on the Sydney Harbour near the thing on all the postcards, the Sydney Opera House.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, and the Sydney Harbour Bridge was right there. And it's like, it's unreal. It's like San Francisco, even more international, no homeless people. No, that's
whoa,
actually...
Whoa.
You know about the homeless people in SF. Right? I mean,
yeah, there are some homeless folks.
I mean, it's pretty bad. Like, we have a serious problem. And ultimately, it's just hurting our economy because somewhere along the line, we thought it would be a good idea to, like, pay homeless people because we felt bad. So, like, taxpayers' dollars were going to the homeless, and then people started flocking from all over the country.
Whoa.
Oh, there, I finally found a picture of you. Here we go.
Inside the game, not inside the politics of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Sydney was beautiful. I had a great time. Their scene's amazing. I have nothing but good things to say about it.
Could anyone else, real talk here with JP, anyone else throw an event in Australia and get enough of a turnout that they would be satisfied with their endeavor? Go.
You mean any other organization? Or?
Yes. Anyone.
No, any person. Payne user.
Anyone.
Maybe. I think the one of the biggest hurdles, I mean, outside of cost, like you'd have to import shit, or if you're going to like outsource to the people that are there with their shit, that in and of itself is, I mean, it's okay. That's doable. The problem I have, and one of the issues I think that WCS suffered from, because quite frankly, their players are quite good, by the way. The Australians don't get a lot of coverage, but Mafia, it's not just Moonglade. They have a few players. Pig, Mafia, these guys are pretty good players. But their times, like if you're going to host a tournament there, it is god-awful times for viewership-wise. I mean, I'm in America, you know, West Coast or East Coast, either one. This is prime real estate for viewership. If you want a tournament to be successful viewership-wise, you have to pander to the American demographic because they're the ones that watch more than anybody else. For anyone in the chat that gets butthurt about that, I'm sorry, but that is science. It's actually true. And if you're, you know, GOM, like if they didn't have a VOD system, they would be the most underwatched tournament in the world, and they already are kind of challenged that way. And WCS, I mean, their numbers, like they peaked at really low numbers given how well their production was.
Speaking of this exact topic in control, I have to say, I'm pretty impressed with IEM and ESL this past weekend.
Yes.
Because they did rebroadcast like motherfuckers, yes, like crazy. And I always saw people watching, always, you know. And it's like when you stop to think about it for a moment and go, you know what, there's probably a different guy at every time zone that's like, yeah, sweet, I just, oh, man, I get to watch this game, awesome. I mean, it's not exactly live, but it is a little bit better about feeling forever alone watching a VOD, you know.
Well, if
yourself,
you care enough, you can make it seem live. Like, it's not hard to avoid spoilers for a couple of hours. Sure. I really don't understand why more tournaments don't do that.
Yeah. I think it's I think a lot of orgs have tried, and you know, we've seen it happen. I don't want to necessarily say that IAM just did it first or anything, but they just did it really well.
NASL has always run rebroadcasts. I think IPL does as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they do.
But the major tournaments like MLG and even the big IPL events, I don't think they do, which is really weird because those are the ones everyone cares about.
Just to clarify, because I'm kind of an idiot with these things, we're talking about just like viewership, but we're going to have a separate segment about IEM, right? Because there's a lot to say about that.
Yeah, of course.
I want to go. Okay, just making sure.
Of course.
But yeah, I think the viewership subject's kind of interesting too. Sorry. Now I'm trying to save myself after being like the weird anal. I got to put my glasses back on so I actually fit the character better.
Put them on. Jeff fixed the guy's computer today.
I'm just going to make sure that we're still going to talk about IEM later, right? Yeah.
Can you tell me about these floaters that I got in my SCSI drive?
I don't know. Don't like them. Don't like it. All right.
Kind of on the viewership subject, though, I want to know what you guys think. I haven't actually heard you talk about this, too. There's been a lot of people that are like, you know, last couple years, viewership numbers have been going down. Is StarCraft dying?
Stabbing it with a knife. Just killing
I
it
am,
off.
What did IEM peak at? Like 55, you guys think? Or 60?
No,
for
I think at least, well, maybe 60.
For StarCraft?
Yeah,
60?
I think 60.
I want to just come out and say, I think 60,000, and I'd very, like, it's a, you know, maybe Live on 3 will cover this kind of stuff. I mean, they have and will, but I'd be interested to hear, like, a Carmack, what he thinks, if that's a success. Because then you go to the LoL stream, there's 100,000. I'm not doing the StarCraft 2 versus LoL. All I'm saying is, at what number is a league happy? Because we used to get 100 with, like, NASL Season 1. Some of the MLGs hit 80, 90, 100,000. But in my opinion, I think, people are saying 70. Okay, 70.
I think Adabisi said 65. Adabisi said 65.
And somewhere in there. I think if it fluctuates between 60 and 70, I think that's actually good and sustainable. It would be obviously nice, and I think after HOTS we'll have closer to 100,000 for a while as well as we bring in new people. But I think stabilizing between 60 and 70,000, I think that's profitable and good, I would have to imagine.
It does seem to have stabilized that because, like, when Diablo 3 came out and there was that big lull and everything viewer dropped, like live streams, tournament streams, just absolutely everything. And now it's kind of come back up to this and it seems to be stabilizing there. I think if we can maintain that,
it's
absolutely fine.
Everyone quit Diablo 3.
Yeah, everyone got bored of the terrible clicking game. Just came back to this. But no, like obviously we're never going to maintain 100,000. That was just the new game excitement that's always going to go down. And we'll go back,
well,
back
maybe
down.
For Wings of Liberty, Greg. But don't you think that 100K peak is absolutely obtainable the moment that Heart of the Swarm comes out?
Oh yeah, I just meant that we weren't going to maintain the initial burst throughout. Sure, like if it had been 200,000, then it would drop down to 150 or whatever.
Yeah.
And hopefully, like, the new games will be better, the players will be more exciting, and the peak will be higher, and then the average will be higher than 60K. But it's always going to drop off a bit. And, like, a lot of people have looked at that, like Jeff was talking about before. They're like, oh, the game's dying because we don't get 100,000 viewers anymore. It's like, no, 60,000 is still really, really good. I think tournaments are pretty happy with that. They don't expect LoL numbers from StarCraft 2 just because we don't have the same kind of and size of fan base. And,
think about the player base.
Yeah.
As well, right? I mean, the player base for LoL is like 3 or 4 million. I mean, that's pretty nuts if you really think about it. The fact that we're even in the same realm of viewers.
Did you say 3 or 4 million?
I think it is, yeah.
Like, you mean like signed players or?
No, like active users that can be
users,
at one given time.
I think it's higher than that, bro.
It might be even higher than that, yeah. It's insane.
Oh, that's crazy. So, all right, well, I guess we kind of, like, have talked about 12 different topics, but...
I know.
Yeah, you know. We got to focus, start drilling in on one side. And first thing I just want to bring up is, well, I mean, Jeff, you said, are we going to talk about it? I guess we could kind of put them together a little bit. Obviously, we have the OnGameNet Star League Season 1 group selections that took place, so we know what the groups are. But additionally, there was a thread on Reddit where someone, ComStat101, did a breakdown of a few FOMOS articles where it sounds like some of the Brood War individuals on the interwebs who were previously vocal about how shit StarCraft II was are coming back a little bit. And partially it's fueled by the now rivalry that exists between the Brood War pros and the StarCraft II pros, which has even gone so far as to insult some of the StarCraft II pros for being quote-unquote second-rate or B-team pros that couldn't hack it in Brood War. So, you know, okay, there's probably some, like, spiteful, hurtful comments there, but I was thinking about it, I was reading a little bit about it, I was like, God, that's kind of interesting, because that's really the storyline that drove pretty much StarCraft II at its peak when it was foreigner versus Korean, yeah. And now it adds another layer to that. I don't think that's necessarily such a bad thing, but I wanted to get you guys' comments, because one of the reasons people said StarCraft II was never going to do well originally is people said, well, if the Brood War fans don't like it, then what kind of an audience do you have to build on?
Oh, I'm thrilled, man. Like, in Brood War, some people don't understand this, and Greg can give a better detailed comment on this, but, like, if you were a bottom-tier pro in a lot of those pro gaming houses, you were the one that had the worst sleeping arrangement. You cleaned the most. A bigger player would come over and say, hey, I need you for training. That player didn't get to say, no, thanks, I don't feel like it. They then sat across from them and played for 10 hours straight, if that's what the person needed. The person would say, I need you to practice this strategy against me, and they'll just do it. It was not a request. It was not a friendly thing. It was like, you're my underling. This is what you do for me. And that attitude wasn't just like in the gaming scene. That's kind of Korean culture. If you are the more famous one, or the older, or the elder, like, the other people kind of, they serve you. They honor you. And in StarCraft II, the guys that were still established and amazing, they stayed behind because they were getting paid the appropriate amount of money. They were being treated fine. But those underlings, they went to StarCraft II. And that's where MC comes out. A guy where, you know, for the longest time, people were posting records. They're like, MC and Brood War was shit, and now he's one of the best in StarCraft II. That proves StarCraft II is a terrible game. And, you know, that kind of stuff, they hear that. That actually bothers them. So that storyline, to me, is really intriguing, because now they're coming into the realm of these more practiced, but previously completely, like, definitely little brother syndrome, top-tier GOM pros.
Yeah, Jeff's absolutely right. Basically, most of the people who are on top of StarCraft II right now, the GSL players at least, they were the bitches of the pro team houses in StarCraft I, and now all of a sudden they're on top, but the Kestrel players come over and see all these people who they just shat on while they were in StarCraft I. They see them dominating. So there's that. And also, the Kestrel players are actually doing an incredibly good job of actually injecting personality into this, because in StarCraft I, that was super professional, pretty reserved. People would make comments every once in a while, but nothing all that big, but it seems they're kind of embracing the new StarCraft II. It's more open. It's more international.
I think they have to.
Yeah. But they're doing a great job of it. Like, if you look at the Kestrel players who came to Anaheim, they were going up on stage, and I think everyone except Calm said something in English to the crowd, and later went up there and did a fucking backflip on stage.
Yeah.
They're really trying to ham it up, and I mean, that's what the foreign audience absolutely loves. And if the Korean audience gets on board with that, then it's perfect. That's the only thing I fear, that if they're more used to the conservative Kespa culture, then that could backfire a bit.
And there go ahead, Greg.
But yeah, for the foreign audience, it's absolutely great. I think it's going to make it a lot more interesting, particularly for the Korean leagues. And a lot of the time, GSL, people watch it just because they know it's the best players, and that makes it exciting, but they don't connect to the players at all. We see when they come over to foreign leagues, there's no excitement if it's not MC, DRG, or MKP playing in a Korean versus Korean match. There's just no personality there. The Kestrel players can change that, and at the same time, injecting a lot more skill into the game, which is another thing we should talk about. They're actually getting ridiculously good really fast.
I want you to expand on that, Greg. I mean, immediately, because we've talked about it so much on the show. Let me, you know.
Some of them are just, like, getting legitimately really good. The ones you'd
expect. Look at WCS.
They went on that win streak, and it wasn't stopped until Heroes PVZ beat, I think, Roro 2-1 or something. I mean, they're just really good. If you look at Effort and Jadong, you can see the StarCraft I mechanics. Effort versus DRG on actually all of the games, but particularly on Tall Dorim, was some of the cleanest Ling Bane and Ling Micro we've seen from anyone in all of StarCraft II. And Jadong's creep spread is already pretty much the best in perfect macro. And you can see little stuff, like he'll leave Banelings right on top of ramps, not even Burrow, just on top of ramps, abusing the vision, and other things that you don't really see StarCraft II players doing. Plus, he's a lot more active with Ling run buys and stuff. He has the ability to do more things, and he has a good tactical mind for what to do. So as soon as decision-making cleans up a bit, like, you see his game versus SC. He did like a terrible attack on Antigua just because he's not quite comfortable with how strong Mutiling Baneling army is versus the Terran army that SC had. And that's just an experience thing. But like his decision making, his tactics, his mechanics, everything is just, you can tell there's a ridiculous amount of potential there.
Effort moving around with like three mutas and hunting observers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he had the spire for corruptors, but he literally made like three mutas and an overseer to hunt observers.
He did that a while back too.
Yeah, one of his games.
Yeah. That is sick shit. I mean, I'm thrilled. But another storyline that this kind of creates to kind of expound upon a point that Greg brought up, but I really want to blow this up because this is big. I was talking about this on a raid call Q&A that I did on my stream. I can't name names, and this is good info, so I don't plan on being chat on this time. But I was talking with a guy that works with one of the leagues that we play in, and they talked about how it's a fact, and if people didn't know this, I mean, they should notice this. In the finals of a tournament, when it's Korean versus Korean, if there's not some amazing storyline there, they could be the two best players in that tournament. The viewership drops off. People would prefer to see foreigners versus Koreans, or Koreans that they've connected with, as Greg put it, playing against a foreigner or another Korean, perhaps. But it has to be something there for people to actually be interested. Generic Korean versus Korean, despite what the forums say, where they're like, "Ah, oh, I want the two best, only skill matters, like I don't care about anything else." Those people are in the minority of viewership. It doesn't matter. But with Kespa coming over, I think there's enough storyline there where we'll still get the best players, Kespa versus Gom, or Gom versus Kespa. But we have an additional storyline that makes it a novelty. It makes it intriguing. It makes it more interesting, which is really good for tournaments. And that's good for everybody. When it's good for tournaments, when it's good for the players, when it creates more storylines, everyone benefits. And I think that's a really exciting thing.
I mean, I just can't really add much to that, Jeff. I think it's makes a lot of sense. It just adds, again, that another layer of storylines, and that is what it comes down to. I think it's a really intriguing thing to think about, because if you think about some of your favorite finals or, you know, why you connect, it is typically a rivalry. We've seen these guys meet five times or four times, and you know, or some words were said online, and certainly, this will kind of change things. It's interesting to hear, though. And also, I wanted to mention that according to this, these guys over on FOMOS, like sort of the Brood War fans turned StarCraft fans, are a big fan of this guy right here, MVP. Apparently, there was a lot of a lot of discussion regarding him during IEM.
Dude, he's amazing
on the boards, and You know, I mean, I don't know if it's because of that connection to Brood War in the past. I don't know if it's because of the style or what. But I just found that to be kind of an interesting point.
He's one of the trendsetters. Like, Koreans very much so gravitate towards what they hear is the best, and they all play that way. MVP is one of the guys who starts the trends that then people gravitate towards. And for that, I think he's held in high esteem in Korea. Like, it was very obvious when his wrists were really bothering him that his practice dropped off, and with it, so did his results. It was like amazing how well he was playing despite the fact that he was in and out of hospitals. But now he seems to have things under control, and it's almost like he just decides to be the best Terran. He's like, well, you know, it was nice of you guys to talk about Tasia, and MKP had a really good run there, but I'm healthy now, so I'm actually the best. I'm just going to win everything I play in.
Sorry. The scary thing is, I don't think he's actually even fully healthy yet. People were still like putting up pictures of him grabbing his wrists and massaging them during it. And it's a complicated – he actually had surgery or has to have surgery. And that has recovery time, and it's not a 100% thing. It's actually the same thing that forced GG Play to retire. So he's like still not at 100%, and he's won the last two tournaments he's entered. It's kind of ridiculous.
That's a cool and sad thing. I hate it when a physical ailment like that holds a player back. Like, that's really sad.
Well, the kind of interesting thing is you can see its effects on his play. Like, he used to be the mechanical beast. He would just outplay everyone. And now I assume he can't practice as much. He's not absolutely dominating mechanically, in part because everyone caught up and in part because he can't practice. And he's going through TVP GSLs and just cheesing everyone in really smart ways. And then he goes into TVZs and just plays super turtly, and he plays mech. He's actually said publicly he plays mech a lot TVZ because it's easier on his wrists. It's not as control oriented. And so he's actually like designing his play around that disability. I think that's really cool.
Pretty crazy. That is pretty crazy. Well, I mean, since we're on the topic, we're going to switch gears from the Brood Horde fan wavering to just the round of 16 group selection. for the Star League. I believe that it starts on the 28th officially, and there will be official streams with English. But Jeff, you said you wanted to talk a little bit about this, so let's kick it off with you.
But what?
About the OSL
round of
16 group selection.
Well, I mean, the whole thing. First of all, MC is in the same group as Flash. I think that's awesome. Obviously, we still have the excuse that I think Flash still needs time at this highest level to be the true Flash we're going to see like moving forward. But MC versus Flash is going to be a gigantic match. Really excited about that. As far as the group selection goes, if there was anybody that could not live up to expectation with an entry, it would be MC, because he's done so much ridiculous shit. But if there's anyone that could exceed expectation for an entry, I guess I need to stop doubting MC, because what he did to come in was the most ridiculously hilarious and bold thing ever. And he did it in front of a panel of like some of the most respected RTS/StarCraft players/minds in the history of the game. But he comes out dressed like a fucking 1990s wrestler, complete with like the stubble. He was in character, like touching the brim of his cap and carrying the coffin exactly how he would. Like, he is so ridiculously off. And I don't know, like, the thing about MC that's so brilliant is that nobody watches that and goes like, this is too much. I don't, you know, fucking MC needs to start practicing and thinking a lot less about how much acting he does. Like, nobody thinks that, because MC has so consistently been a showman, and it's just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Oh my God.
You can't get mad. It's just he just grabbed
it's attention. A fucking 90s wrestler. Like, you have to understand the part of my mind that was fucking blown. Why is MC like a
WWF fan?
Like a closet WWF. No, that is WWF.
He's not a closet. You said he's a big fan.
An old StarCraft 1 player, Nal Rock, actually named himself after The Rock. And he would do wrestling moves as ceremonies. Like, he would do the throat cut thing and all that.
Oh my God, dude.
That's kind of funny.
It even has the SK Gaming badge on the freaking...
They made him a special SK Undertaker outfit.
He, like, never took it off and giggled. He was just in character the whole time. Like, amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Wow.
He sits there with his head down.
Is all the players sitting there politely laughing their asses off. Like, there's, you know, just kind of like...
Well, how else do you deal with that?
It's just, I know. It's,
yeah, absolutely.
It was awesome. It was amazing, man. MC is a freaking legend, man. And you know what? We always talk about how cool that is, but it's got to be inspiring. Like, I don't speak to a lot of Koreans, so I don't want to give this too much credence, I guess. But I have to imagine he inspires a lot of them. Like, right now, the foreigners are extremely important to StarCraft II, and there's Korean streams of GSL winners that have like 1,000 viewers, and then there's MC and other people that stream that have a little bit of personality to them, and it's 3,500, 4,000 viewers or more. I mean, they got to imagine that there's something that he's doing really right, and all it is him like acting and wearing his heart on his sleeve and giving candid responses and being a troll, like just having a good time.
Yeah. I mean, what do you guys have to say about it, Greg or Taylor? What do you think about it?
I mean, awesome. It pretty much plays into what I was talking about before, about how the Kespa players, well, he's not a Kespa player, but you know, the Koreans are now having a lot more personality, and hopefully they seem to be going in MC's path, and MC has been the Korean who knows how to play to an audience, how to get foreign fans interested in him, because that's the problem a lot of the Koreans have. And it seems like the Kespa players are going the same way, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And they're also doing it in a much angrier, meaner way. They're like all talking shit about Parting and all the other GSL players, which I think is really funny.
It's kind of cool because like
kind of sucks for Parting, but otherwise it's really
fun. It sucks for. I'm more speaking to the spirit of it. Like, it does suck for Parting, but that creates that cool situation where, to use Greg as an example, when Greg plays MKP, there's a lot more people extra interested because of what Greg has said about him. When those guys play Parting, who, by the way, is a pretty fucking good Protoss player,
Yeah, he's
There's
a really weird pick.
More people interested.
Just he's a really weird pick for the bad guy because he's actually really good. I don't know.
You mean based off of things he said?
No. They're actually saying he's like bad at the game. They were calling him a free win and whatnot. I have no idea why.
It's got to be some inner Korean, like they're like. I've asked a lot of Koreans about that stuff. Like, why do you guys mannermule each other and like dance your stuff and like act like such a dick to each other? And they're like, oh, it's for the fans. We don't care.
Yeah,
I gotta imagine that's what's going on there.
Okay.
Yeah, it makes enough sense.
All right, I'm in on that. There's some polls over on Team Liquid, but I want to hear from you guys. What do you think in terms of the group to watch? Group A has Jangbi, DRG, MKP, Rain, B, Fantasy, and STIs, Last, C, Baby, Parting, MVP, and Flying, and D, Best MC, Flash, and Son.
A and D.
Yeah, A or D. Because you got DRG versus MKP, which is kind of a rivalry. Jangbi, he's the last OSL winner, and he's kind of... he seems to have a lot of potential at StarCraft 2, I've heard. I haven't seen a lot of his games yet. And then you have MC and Flash in Group D, which is almost enough by itself.
Pretty much agree with that as well. I'm not sure how the polls ended up. I guess I should scroll down here. The DRG, MKP, Rain, Jangbi had the most votes with Flash, Son, MC, Best behind it. So to be expected.
Hard to beat that.
I believe it starts on the 28th, guys. Definitely be checking out. I believe they're streaming over on Twitch channel. I believe they have a HD and then a normal channel also.
Flash's group is ridiculous, by the way, because he's not – this is the story for most of the Brood War pros, but none of them were like talent guys that just played, you know, 2 or 3 hours a day. Flash was actually kind of a monster in training, and he's in a group with 3 other Protoss, so I have to imagine he's going to show some fucking
murder.
He's
going to play quite a bit of TVP, yeah.
He's going to show some murder TVP, I think.
He was actually known for playing like more than all the other Kespa pros. Like all the KT guys would say they go to sleep and he's still sitting up practicing. And he forces them to stay awake and practice with him more.
Cal looks really solid.
Cal?
As well. Yeah, he took out Flash in the ace match with his Protoss and made it look pretty easy, actually. I was really impressed.
He was always...
Cal was a monster.
Yeah, he was always one of those players who was like good but not a Star League winner, but always kind of a contender. Like
I played him in Brood War.
4 years.
Him in Brood War. It was a practice match for the team, and he cannon rushed me in Brood War.
How'd you feel?
He was like the best cannon rusher. Well, yeah. There's a little bit of like a. Do you guys know that famous scene from The Simpsons? The guy that's always in prison. He like stabs someone in prison, or no? He gets stabbed in prison. And he goes, "Now I know how it feels like." I sat there and kind of felt that a little bit.
It's like, come on, man! In a practice match to join the team, you're gonna cannon rush me. It's brutal.
Cal always did that. I remember on Coliseum, he would do the cannon rush plus zealot or cannon plus zealot rush every single PvT.
Why not?
Yeah, why
and
not?
The thing is, let me say this too: like, this isn't like now where if I like ladder, I can hit a couple. Like last night, I played Jukto. Like we don't. Right now, we kind of brush shoulders with these big Korean pros, so it's not nearly as big. In Brood War, I mean, Greg was one of the only guys to go to Korea, so this wasn't as big for him. But for me to get a game with Cal, a guy who then, like, a couple weeks later was in and around the finals of the OSL, it was, like, the thing that we talked about for the next year. It was a big fucking deal.
Like, so every day, hey, dude, you remember that game I just rolled up?
I played a cannon rush.
Played a best of three against Pusan, and all I did was I sat in the channel and I was like, hey, dude, can we play some games? I was like, sure. But for Cal, to then cannon rush me, it was like going down Splash Mountain in Disneyland. Like, it was like, oh, this is over already, and he thinks I'm a fucking joke, and I'm never going to get to play him again, like, ever, ever, ever again. There's no rematch after you get cannon rush. He's just like, yeah, move along. Like,
thank you for the warm-up.
Yeah.
We're going to talk more about some of the Kespa players in another topic here in a moment, but we're going to shift gears to ESL, which took place this weekend. And, God, it was literally like what Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, like the marathon event at Gamescom. And, Jeff, you seemed really, really perky when the topic of ESL came up.
Yeah.
So,
well, for me, this is huge. Because in the past, and Carmack's a friend, I love the guy. last year, ESL/IEM was kind of the joke league. Like, they had internet issues at events. They, the players were I mean, Greg famously tweeted, like, a live-action novel about what do I put out the fire with my urine or do I go shower? Like, ridiculous things like that. Like, that was the storyline. The leagues were terrible for the most part. And Carmack didn't really hide from it. He was just kind of like, yeah, it sucks. We're having a really tough time. But for their opener event, right now at least, which is kind of weird to talk about an opening event in August, but that is what it
is,
I guess.
Right.
They kicked ass. Jarrett Kale is a fucking amazing host. Like, a lot of people were complaining about some of his awkwardness and stuff, but that's kind of his shtick.
So?
Yeah, I thought he was great. Commentating-wise, they had one of the best pools of commentators you could ever ask for. Event-wise, which for some people is the most important thing, great games. Great system, I thought, and I'm really happy for them, because guess what? The world doesn't necessarily not need another great league, and right now Europe's kind of kicking ass. So I think that's great.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job as well. I mean, I don't know, I just showed it up on the stream, but they had a panorama shot of the crowd, and this is Friday.
Yeah.
And it's pretty crazy. I mean, all of the whole hall was pretty much dedicated, fans all over the place. I mean, they were just – it was wild. And it was good to see.
I think the lack of booths is kind of ridiculous. Booths are way cooler than just a desk on a stage like that. Maybe they ran into some technical difficulties with that, or the budget wasn't there.
Oh, I agree. And David right. King actually came out and said that the way they're moving forward is boothless.
Yep.
He actually said.
Really? But, you know, I mean, keep in mind, guys, like, look at this setup, and it's very hard to see here, but if you actually look to the far side over by the blue, for those who are on the stream, keep in mind, like, they created a setup in which they will be able to filter through games at an accelerated rate, but be able to feature the games that people want to see. So every single time that you add a booth, then you have to add the fucking backup booth, because then player A and B have to get in that booth to get ready to play in the next matchup. Then you have to, and you're constantly like rotating your through. So in this case, they basically set it up four across. So they had four potential matches and they knocked them the fuck down. Now, I actually have quite a bit of experience in the production world, believe it or not.
What?
And this is the right way to fucking do it. The booths are a nightmare. Like, this is actually, keeping in production in mind, this is the way to fucking do it.
Nah, I don't think so, though. If you have the budget for the production, right, on, like, a GSL level.
Pain user, you know what, let's like, erase your brain for a second and be that guy watching a fucking stream on the internet, right? And you're watching, and he's watching, and 15-year-old Billy's like, this is great, I can't wait, here comes the first match! And it's fucking, you know, Nesty taking on Flash, you know, in 6 months, and Flash is good, and it's like, everyone's free, oh my god, look at them, there's fucking lasers and shit, and girls coming out, and lights and confetti, and they're like, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to need 40 minutes to reset for the next match.
Well, no, but a lot of I don't know about a lot, but at least IPL has had four booth setups where they have one match, and then they have the next match prepping in the secondary set of booths.
Yeah,
like, I think that's the best way to
IPL,
do it.
IPL, the league who just said that we're going away from booths.
Well, hold on.
I think that's a bad
decision. I can touch on that a little bit. Setting booths at IPL 3 were just a freaking nightmare for IPL. They were dealing with the Atlantic City Union trying to build booths on stage.
Yeah,
these union guys
it
were coming
sucks.
Out like,
that's
what the hell are you doing
to
our stage? I mean, it was ridiculous. It was a total nightmare.
You know what we need to do? We need to buy the fucking set to Tic-Tac-Toe. What was it? Not Tic-Tac-Toe. What was it? Hollywood Squares. we soundproof the whole thing. You know, fucking circle takes.
No, I'm thinking of a different game. Oh, yeah.
But, like, how can
you...
where they have, like, the 9x9 grid.
Yeah. How can you get rid of the, like, years of booth games? You know, OSL, MSL, Pro League. Like, the booth is so ingrained in my StarCraft memory.
A little bit, though. Like, here's the thing. When I watch GOM, I'd be really weirded out if they didn't have a booth. But the GOM the GOM tournament format is conducive to that because they have stuff to go in between. They have the ability for the players to prep before, but also their players in the booths, they actually like film the production around those booths. IPL did an okay job with booths, but every other league, let's think about this for a second. Haven't most of the booths kind of sucked ass, like getting player emotions out of it?
Well, that's because they put like a shitty little webcam on you, and they don't do it right. And well, I don't. Maybe it's actually really hard to do properly.
You a tank driver, you're like,
yeah, yeah. I don't understand.
Craig, like, the clouds, you're like right in the camera, like.
I don't know. To me, that just seems like poor execution on the league side of things. Maybe there's technical difficulties. I don't understand, but it really seems like booths done well are by far the best way to do it. It doesn't look right sitting up there on a little rickety table in front of the casters.
Let me see if you guys agree with this. Let me do this, because here's my actual only concern with this. My only concern, my highest concern, is player integrity. As long as the players cannot hear the casters, and there's not like weird distractions or anything like that, that's all I care about. If what's completely second to that is the aesthetics of a booth, or you know, the emotional potential for someone sitting outside a booth. So when I'm putting out there, I want to see if you guys agree, and it sounds like you do so far, is if a league can kick ass with a booth, the booth cancels sound, there's good camera work in there, good. Is that better than on an equal level, someone can't hear anything with the headset and they're exposed, like DJ Wheat said, and we can roll through it quicker?
I think so, yeah.
I think it's better.
I think it just adds to how it looks. And you're also more likely to have that integrity. Like, I've never had a pair of headphones that was actually completely soundproof. I couldn't hear it when the casters got super excited. And if that happens early in the game, you know it's a 6-pool or a 10-pool or something like that. Whereas in a booth, you usually have the soundproof headsets as well, and then you have white noise pumped in, and you have the booth itself. I think it's much more easy to have that integrity with that. And also, honestly, it looks like there is that integrity. It looks like the players are isolated from the cast and from the casters. And that's kind of important, too, just for the viewing experience. You want to look at it and not think. Like, in the IPL, we were commenting about that. They had legit headphones. They probably couldn't hear anything, but they were right in front of the casters. It looked like they should be able to hear it, and that just bugs you. So I think the booths are definitely worth it, unless it's just a ridiculous hassle. And so many leagues have done it, I can't imagine that it actually is.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's a hassle to leagues that haven't done it before.
As we enter year 2 and 3 of these leagues that have been running, you know, they're going to start looking at ways to cut costs. And, you know, I think the booth is going to be one of the first to go. The booth was kind of like a community trident, like, pick them up, guys, no booth, so they can go fuck themselves type of a thing. So I kind of agree in that there is a little bit of just like, we're sweeping this under the rug right here, just, you know, a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think you're 100% right in the sense that if it's like a startup league or a league that definitely is in a position where they need to cut costs, I totally agree. The booth aesthetics, stuff like that should be the first things out the window. But once you've established yourself and you're like a top-tier league and you're trying to compete with, you know, the production of GOM or something along those lines, I think the booth just adds a whole lot to the, like, competitive
aspect. I agree. And there's definitely a choice that leagues are going to have to make. But let's round this all back to, you know, the person who at the end of the day is likely going to be bringing, you know, paying the bills, and that's the person watching it. And what they want more than anything is they want StarCraft shoved down their throat with a fucking SCV behind it. Just, you know, like, they want no downtime. They want game after game after game. And so I think that when leagues achieve that in a cool environment, I think that's it's a really big win. Anyway. Any ESLs we continue on? You want to talk a little bit about the games at all?
IEM games, too. We never really...
That's what I meant.
Yeah. It's cool seeing Nurcio make it down there to the finals. Unfortunately, I felt like he got pretty outclassed in the finals, but nonetheless, 3-0-ing MC, beating Violet in a nail-biting ZBZ series. His was the one that went 3-2, right?
Yes.
Not misspeaking. Pretty good games. I think it's still a cool reminder to me, like, like IPL had its production woes, but the games were so good that I think it was saved to a certain extent. This league did a really good job, so that wasn't really a concern. But they still had great games, so it made the league, like, when I think about IEM Gamescom, I'm like, wow, that was great. It was really, really nice. And I think, you know, that there's no way a league can impact that except for to make not have shitty rules and shitty maps. But to credit them, I think they did a good job. I don't think any storyline was stolen away from it because of some, you know, disconnect or bad rules or something like that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's actually a really good way to put it. It's just we don't actually have much to talk about IEM because they just let the tournament happen and everyone got to focus on the games and they didn't detract from it, which is really what you want from a tournament. Like, they did everything well. There were no problems. As for the games, I haven't seen a lot of Nurchios yet, but the story, gameplay-wise to me, was just MVP's TVZ style going through the tournament. Like, Terrence had been struggling with TVZ recently, so he comes into it with this new, very mech-based style. He's aiming for the late game, he gets this super army, and then he uses Raven Viking BC, which is a composition that a lot of Terrence have, like, theory-crafted about, but most haven't actually been able to get to it safely or then use it practically. And he uses it, and he kind of just destroys everyone else. Who all the Zergs were beating all the other Terrans at the tournament. So yeah. That was really cool to watch, just see him twisting things around for the Terran matchup once again. That was a big standout thing to me.
He had a real close series with Slivko, actually. Slivko looked amazing, but he got knocked out by him. But I thought, his mech play was just absolutely unreal. I mean, MVP's been working on it for a while, too. Like, he's been trying to mix in the mech for quite some time, but he hasn't really found a way to make it work against the Korean Zergs, because a lot of them will do like a 8 Overlord Roach timing drop right on top of his mech army, and he's spending so much resources on like turrets and tries to get that PF in the middle, but he was finally able to bring everything together in a way that was just amazing to me. Like, the quick PF near his third on pretty much any map he went mech on, really good sensor tower placement. And on Ohana, he like double command center blocked the above the rocks where the Zerg can come in that way, and he put one PF there and orbital. Just like his building placement, it just seemed like he had really worked out all the kinks in his mech, and he's been trying to do it for a really long time. But like every time he tries to use it twice in a best of, somebody will always take him down real quick. But this time, I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, he covered all his bases. And that's what's so difficult playing mech, especially in StarCraft 2, is like the quick muta switch, roach drops.
Is this MVP you're talking about?
Yeah.
I think one of the big heroes for me, too, and it was unfortunate. Not everyone can win, I guess. But Cass versus Nesty was a dismantling with surgical precision that was just amazing to watch. Cass on Atlantis spaceship. The comeback, I think, on Metropolis, was it? But maybe it wasn't Metropolis. In any sense, he played beautifully against one of the best Zergs on the planet, and in particular showed innovative play that I really, really, really was excited about.
Yeah, he also played really, really well against MC. Ended up losing, but he played very, very well. Can he had like a 40-minute game on Metropolis, I think.
Jeff,
really
can you elaborate just a little bit on Cass?
Yeah. What I liked about Cass on, I want to comment on Atlantis Spaceship because it's one that's most vividly in my mind, is that he opened up fairly standard in the sense that it was like a bio play, obviously mixed in tanks, but he did the little things that I really like that third base, the cost for that third base, well, I guess it usually functions as a fourth base, but the third base with three gases is that it's an extremely exposed base, and he never like bullheadedly marched in there. He always used angles to get his tanks the maximum amount of damage possible and get the best return on them. He was committed to drops all game long. But what I really liked about his play was that in the late game, he transitioned into a mech style with like mass Thors, still using tanks, and then harassing with Hellions. That's something that some Terrans are doing, but they're slow to kind of like accept this as a strategy, I feel. And I always get in trouble when I critique like the mass Terrans, but you know, you guys got to build more Ravens. Cass, I really liked it. Like, he just looked like he was the better player to Nesty in that series. And
sure,
I'm a bleeding heart for foreigners versus Koreans. I'm sorry, I'm biased. I like that story. I know.
Bitch. Jeez.
So it was cool to watch Nesty, who had been beasting through that tournament, playing great. go up against Cass, and Cass to do the run that he did, but to play the way he did is what I was excited about. It wasn't like an awesome two racks, which, not to take anything away from that, but that's like a shallow win. This was a 30-minute, I've outsmarted you, I'm out executing you, and this is a map that you're supposed to win on, motherfucker. Boom! Headshot. It was amazing.
As far as other players, I think I agree with every single one of you in regards to Nurcio and looking so great, but in the end, ultimately just falling short. And I think if I recall, he won the first game, and then MVP was kind of like, boom, yeah. Boom, and just line him up and shoot him down.
And he tried to cheese the crap out of him on Ohana. He did like a two racks into four racks all in, and Nurcio's like, as far as I can tell, is like, you can't beat him with an all-in. He's so good at sniffing out all-ins from Protoss and Terran, and he holds them with ridiculous precision. Like, he's so good at that. I'm surprised players haven't figured that out yet, but
it's obviously not the case, but when I watch MVP, I always get the impression he's just like, okay, can I beat you easily? And then if you actually hold it, then he'll go into the, okay, I'll sit, take 40 minutes to beat you if you insist.
Yeah.
Get that impression watching him. It's like the old Jadon from StarCraft 1. He has to lose the first game to get pissed off and then actually try.
Well, that's kind of what it looked like there.
And it's also just a complete, like, mind frick if you play him. You've seen him cheese so many times in so many series. It's just, it has to be on the forefront of your mind the whole time.
It's an absolute mindfuck playing a player like that. He's just capable of everything.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, going into any series with him, you just have absolutely no idea what he's going to do. So it's like, how do you really prepare for that?
Yeah. So the only, I mean, obviously every player deserves a little bit of recognition, but I think another one who absolutely, you know, although falling short in the semifinals, deserves a shout-out is that Vortix continues to show a really amazing play. And you guys, I'm sure, are now all starting to get very familiar with his story, but the brother of Lucifron, and you know what now, three tournaments where he's kind of made a name in a major way, at least with some major victory over another opponent or a fourth or fifth place finish. But he beat Supernova. He beat another Korean Terran.
4GG?
Yeah, 4GG.
4GG,
and then fell to MVP.
He had a great tournament, and you know, it's interesting because he's been one of the best-kept secrets of the European scene. Like, he's topped the EU ladder, which is no small feat, but the community's kind of moved away from any ladder accomplishments, which I don't think is necessarily the wrong thing, but that's just a big deal. And he's played a lot. I've actually gotten a chance to play him a whole bunch, and I it was really funny being an American, because I thought he was a Smurf. Like, he played fucking amazing, and I'm like, why have I never heard of this guy? He's really good. And then he starts showing up in these tournaments, and he's a fun guy to watch. Like, on the one hand, I think one of the ways you could describe his gameplay is very cheesy. He's very, you know, he loves them Banelings, and he's going to hit those timings, and sometimes those timings look really silly. I think the first series against Supernova, it ended very anticlimactically because he tried a cheese that just did not work at all. It got stomped on in Tomb Valley, I believe it was.
Yeah.
But then he won the next series because his strategies synced up against the same player, and he was the guy that eliminated Supernova.
Yeah, he also, like, MVP's mech style was sort of the perfect counter to his Ling-centric, like, Ling-Baneling-Muta style. He never really adapted from that. I didn't see him, you know, switch into roaches, I don't think once against MVP. So, I don't know if MVP just decided to bust that out at that point, but he used the mech build really, really well against Vortix. And it kind of countered his super Ling-heavy style pretty effectively, I think.
Yeah, if you're as clean with mech as MVP is, you really just don't die to any cheese. That's kind of the reason that mech hasn't been used as much. It does actually have a lot of vulnerabilities to cheese, but that's largely because everything is very fragile, and people don't use it so much, so it hasn't really been hammered out. MVP obviously has hammered it out, and he's figured out exactly what timing anything can come at. And if you know that, if you have the proper composition, then mech units are just so strong, and Terran's so strong defensively, you can absorb pretty much anything. So any aggressive player against mech like MVP is kind of in trouble.
So final thoughts on ESL. He did a great job out of the gate. Obviously, we're going to have a lot more ESL coming up, as I think they are visiting, let me go to the top. You got the, you know, all the qualifiers, and
have they released their full schedule?
I don't think so, but I
think they have. It's like,
have they?
Well, careful, Greg. Because if they haven't released it publicly, because I know you and I know.
They've released, it looks like, according to, for Season 7, it looks like Cologne is up there, obviously done. And then they have the Guangzhou, the China.
Guangzhou.
I
believe the pronunciation is Guangzhou. It's a Zhao sound. Zhao.
Fuck you too. So that's all I see here.
If they haven't announced the other ones, just know that it's a lot of the usual places, but they're awesome. And if they have said it publicly, then Greg, I'm sorry for cutting you off, but I think I might have just saved your life. So
Carmack definitely knows Hitman, so that's a good call.
All right,
Polish Hitman.
Polish judo using Hitman.
You guys know that?
He in only what? Assassinates his targets with judo.
He is really?
Yeah.
I thought it was judo.
Judo. Maybe it's judo. It's something with judo. A J. Well, all I knew, judo and jiu-jitsu after he said it.
Haven't you seen every picture of Carmack is him picking up.
Yeah.
Okay, in jiu-jitsu, they
he
don't
can
pick
up. MC. That's
they
not hard.
Pretzels.
Or not easy.
Yeah.
Would not fight that guy. Not fight him.
You know, the first person I ever saw him like pick up like that is sort of his shtick. You want to know who it was?
Who?
You'll never believe in a million fucking years.
John Candy.
Can I bring up a picture real quick? Hold on.
Well, that he picked up that giant Ukrainian guy.
John Candy.
Backslasher.
No, hold on. Hold on. Here it comes. I've got a whole slew of images of this.
Slasher was fat? What?
Woo. All right, here it comes. You ready?
2000s. He was 400 pounds.
Jessica Chobot.
Nice. You got to show those pictures.
No shit. Jessica Chobot. There's a video out there somewhere.
Oh, you didn't? You're not putting it up. Okay.
Yeah, I don't have the video.
He's looking. He's on it.
I don't have the video. I'm sure.
I was interviewed by Jessica
Chobot.
I'm sure
if you find Jessica Chobot and Carmack.
She's from G4 TV, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. IPL hired her for season one to do the interview player introduction things. And I thought her last name, much like Sundance's, was a made up stage name or something.
Nope.
It turns out that there are a robot people out there.
It's an anime series as well. Yeah. Chobots.
Oh, here it is. Hold on. Shit, Chobot gets spanked. He picked her up and he spanked her.
Are they that good of friends or is he just that awesome of a guy?
This is for real. I don't know.
I can see Carmack just doing that.
Carmack is an interesting guy. How I say him? He does the fake interview. You know, he does the USAT.
Anyway, yeah.
You can find it. Look up Chobot.
I've aided USAT.
Yeah, it's really... Dude, this was back in... God, this was back in, 2005 and shit. God.
Where did she come from? Has she just always been a host?
Dude, she licked the fucking PSP. No shit. No shit. That's how her career started. She licked a goddamn fucking gaming device.
Oh, is she like a YouTube guy or a girl or something like that, I mean?
No, man. She freaking licked the PSP, took a picture of it... And apparently this picture just spread across the internet, and that was enough. She didn't make a video of her licking the PSP or anything. It's just picture. It's just like someone picked it up. They're like, God damn it, that's pretty hot. And they're like, hey, Bob, you got to check out this picture. And it fucking got spread to 8 more people. And then, you know, if you didn't open it and send it to 12 other people, then you weren't going to meet the girl of your dreams. Then eventually it landed in the lap of some dude at IGN, and they fucking hired her.
Please, wait. No blowjob jokes.
I'm not mad. I think it's amazing. It's crazy. It's like one picture. And she's the coolest fucking person in gaming.
At least that's how she got her job and not met her future husband or something like that, because that would be a really bad story.
Nah.
How did you and Daddy meet?
I licked your father. I licked him in the no-no spot. And now we're married.
Oh, shit. People mistake that as not – it's not anger.
It's sheer amazing, man.
No, it's freaking amazing. I mean, the whole construct of internet phenomenon. It's like Chobot is one of the most amazing. She made a career out of a picture licking a fucking PSP.
She's like the Little John of the gaming industry.
Give her some crazy credit. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking about MLG. Talking about one other topic that everyone wants to hear people talk about. That'll be Stephanie. Next here on Inside the Game. Happy birthday. By the way, when we open up the phone lines, if you don't say happy birthday to Idra, like the moment that you call in, you're fucking gone, man.
Gone.
Peace. Not going to happen. All right, we'll be back with more Inside the Game after this. Don't go away. You're back. We're back for the second hour here of Inside the Game, episode 50. And we just finished talking about ESL. Going to move on to MLG Raleigh. And some interesting, I guess, discussion on the interwebs about Raleigh. I guess, what do people know? Because one of the biggest questions that's being asked right now about this particular event is, where is the hype? There are apparently 8 secret spots, guys, that are still unknown, as far as I know, unannounced, assuming the rumor mill was running crazy, saying that it was the Kespa players. But there does seem like there has been kind of a lack of hype. And I'm not sure if that's because it's been a while since the last event, if it's because the arenas have been not StarCraft II the whole time, but they've actually been like 3 different, you know, types of games. But as we go into this weekend, MLG Raleigh, what? Go ahead, in control.
I don't mind it because MLG's hype is usually Adam, Sundance, Lee, and a few others filleting themselves on Twitter over and over again, referring to, like, ambiguous reasons why you should be there and why they're going to be there. I'd like it if it was cool hype, like, they got fucking Shibby, who they make videos about, you know, Dr. Pepper houses and stuff, to do like an acted awesome Shibby video, where he's like, "Hey guys, I'm Shibby," and you're like, "This is fuck," you're like, "Whoa, we're gonna do something exciting, something different." But instead, they're just kind of being quiet, which is, it also could be just a Raleigh thing. I remember last year there was a hurricane inbound, so
it was,
nobody talked about Raleigh because there was the fear that actually everyone was gonna die. This time around, I mean, a couple of the storylines that got robbed, well, not robbed really, but are taking away from the anti-hype, is that the semifinals are being aired at the same time.
Right.
Okay, so that's kind of interesting. They're really excited about a couple of console games they've introduced. I think Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 will be here or something like that. Mm-hmm. The fighting game scene for them is kind of growing. Don't take anything I say as like, maybe, true, maybe not. I thought I heard that. I'm not sure though. But then as far as StarCraft 2, you're right. There's not really any hype. There's not, but I mean, for all the players and everyone else, like, it's another MLG, and MLG is, our frickin' Christmas. We're super excited. It's our big tournament in the NAT.
Who are the 8 players? Go ahead, Greg. Go ahead.
I think what's happening is the 8 players are the Kespa players, and the MLG's guys are actually so high on them that they're just like, we don't actually have to hype this. As soon as we announce it, the world will blow up, because they really, really over-exaggerate their excitement about the Kespa players. It was actually kind of sickening at Anaheim. I kind of think that's what's happening.
Well,
it's like, this is going to make the storyline for us. We can just blow it off.
It sounds like, well, at least people in chat are saying that.
Real answer, by the way.
That the Pro League finals is the same weekend, so that could eliminate some.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Or it's the last week of Pro League.
Yeah, they'll have a playoff thing. So the last week actually isn't super important unless there's bubble teams.
Right. I don't know, but it's literally what now, a couple days before the event. Like I'm kind of excited to find out what all the big hoo ha is going to be about, because there's just 8 additional spots, and if I'm not mistaken, they go into the
raffle to the audience. Okay. They should raffle them to the audience.
Yes,
you can have a chance to play with the pros. Just get fucking murdered.
Come on up.
It's like, if you kill one unit. You get a free processor.
Survive as long as possible.
I think Greg's right, by the way. The fact that they haven't hyped it at all means that it's a big, big announcement, like the Kespa players, which would be big. It's not 8 GOM guys. It's not, you know, not foreigners. There's not any auto seeds like that. It just absolutely has to be the Kespa guys. Otherwise, there would have been some kind of precursor information, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I agree.
Well, it's a very top-heavy tournament, and one of the biggest changes is it looks like we're going to have bracket play for the groups. In fact, that's a pretty big change.
What?
Oh, Greg, you didn't hear it. We've talked about this. The two-sided bracket thing that then concludes in a final. Yeah. That's their new format.
Like what?
They're doing that in groups?
Yes.
What the fuck? How is that going to work? How many people are in groups now?
Oh, I don't know about groups.
Oh, okay.
I'm just talking about the final bracket, okay. The championship Sunday.
208 open bracket players plus 24-seeded group players. Open bracket, obviously. Group play is 24-seeded players plus final 8 open winner bracket. So 32 players. 4 8-player double elimination groups. So there are 4 8-player brackets.
That's weird.
That's different.
The championship bracket. Yeah, the championship bracket will be top 40 players, 32 group play players, plus final 8 with the winners and losers bracket.
Round robin is the whole reason to have groups. That's like the fair way to do it. Everything is fair and you avoid the double elimination problems. I don't know why they would move away from that.
So here it is, players, by the way. Top 16 players of 2012 MLG Summer Arena are seeded into group play. A further 8 invited players are seeded into group play.
Okay. The 8 invites are pretty funny. Like,
I can't hold it any longer.
Are you getting a trident?
I'm one of the 8 invited players, you guys. You better watch the fuck out, because here it is. That's right. That's right. I'm coming for you, motherfucker. But it's just kind of funny that we haven't heard even a peep.
All the casters who aren't casting are actually going to be the 8.
we
finally get to see how good they are.
Oh, we don't need that.
We do not.
I don't know. It's interesting. I think MLG, like, I'm so, you know, in the past I've ranted and raved about chairs, and some of the stuff kind of sounds like bullshit. Like, the whole point of this year was to not do invites, I felt, for their group play. Like, that was their big message, right? All more invites. Everyone here is qualified. Everyone earns their spot. Then they're doing invites. I think the year ago, Jeff, right now, would be really trident-y and really upset about that. But right now, for whatever fucking reason, maybe it's because I'm going to Disney World in December. I don't know.
Let me throw out an alternate spin on this. The group play, while I agree with everything you say, Idra, the group play is kind of a non-eventful stage of the tournament for spectators.
Totally,
like,
agree.
It, while people want to watch their favorite players match up, it may not hit the stream. It may, you know, it may not really have implications because one person's already out and they're just playing to play anyway. So at least a double elimination bracket adds, I think, some story to an otherwise relatively, you know, I guess stale group of games. But
yeah.
then you have to weigh, like, story. Or a story, or,
oh,
you know, like you said, offering up pretty much the best way to really present these players and seed them into the championship bracket.
Sorry, we were distracted by the Demon Dogs. I don't know.
I get what you're saying. It's to spruce up for the viewership of... I mean, the groups were kind of silly in the sense that it was just for seeding, right? So someone got their asses handed to them and someone came out like way on top, and that provided very little storyline. So now with elimination, there's more at stake. I guess I think the weird part I agree with what Greg's saying. Like, the whole point of the group was so that you had that little extra cushion because you've earned it. You've kind of placed yourself in that spot to be privileged. Winning your group puts you in the frickin' semifinals or whatever it is, the quarterfinals of the entire tournament. Much. Like, that's ridiculously awesome if you're to win that group. So that's kind of where the stake argument comes in. So for them to do groups, but their elimination anyways, it sounds like we're just kind of naming another round of the overall bracket anyways, and we just added the word group to it. Doesn't it kind of feel like that?
Yeah. I'd say that's pretty accurate. I don't know. Payne, is there any thoughts? This is a pretty drastic change.
I mean, I agree with everything that was said. Moving on.
Wow. All right.
Cool with that.
All right. Well, obviously that'll be happening this weekend. It starts on Friday, goes Saturday and Sunday. And I believe that they've already posted at least a broadcast schedule. We are having Lee on Live on 3 tomorrow, so we're going to hope to get out those 8 players. We're going to not let them leave until we find out what's going on with them.
Grind it out.
But also the other big question is why the change? And certainly take your guys' notes and take them to the table when we do that. So before we open up the phone lines for the remainder of the episode, the other big thing that, of course, people have been asking about, want to hear comments are, is the rumor mill is churning, and it's not butter. It's actually Stefano going to Evil Geniuses, leaving Millennium, which has been made public. Whole lot of speculation going around here. I think some people are calling Stefano to EG like the worst kept secret if it actually happens, and it kind of would be. But as I was kind of saying earlier, Jeff, before we started the show, now that this has been posted by Slasher on GameSpot, so now that it's been posted, I feel like people think there's this giant key that's just been like put into the hands of me, and then I'm supposed to shove this like down your throat to try to unlock the information, but I'm guessing I already know what's going to be said. So let's speculate at least. Stefano to EG would have implications for you guys. And I know that Pain User with that grin on his face is curious to hear if there's anything you can say.
Well, we're actually pretty free to talk about it because they haven't like told us anything for sure yet. We don't know if he's been signed or not. We don't know if there's a contract. So everything we're saying is just us bullshitting and speculating. I personally think that it's not a done deal, but I think that we will get him. Everyone knows he's out for money. Everyone knows that we have the most money, and he's obviously a great pickup. So the only problem I could see is his behavior. We're obviously a much more professional team than pretty much anyone else. We kind of have to be just because of all the sponsors we represent. And, you know, he tweets certain things about certain ethnic groups being killed by other groups. You can't really do that while you're on EG. So the only situation I can see is you're not allowed to say shit like that anymore. And if he's willing to do that, I'm pretty sure it'll happen.
That's pretty, I think, blunt perspective on it all. Jeff, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's Stefano is the best foreigner right now. Absolutely. And he has been for a while. He has an amazing talent. He's just an amazing guy. And he's been an absolute rock star. Like, he's not just like a silent little, doesn't say a peep kind of guy that plays the game really well. He's actually a pretty robust, rock star is just a good way to describe him. He's an interesting personality that way. He's a magnet for attention, both with success and with who he is. So any team every team would be stupid not to at least try to talk to him and see if they are in the realm of, you know, try and obtain him. Some of the interesting storylines I think that develop are the usual crap that we don't even have to bring up because it's just silly. But what I find interesting is that what Greg just hit on, like, people are like, well, Stefano said some really dumb stuff in the past, and I think they're expecting us to be like, that, you know, wasn't that stupid, and it was, you know, given his age and with the French culture the way it, like, no.
Right.
It was a fucking idiotic, stupid as shit thing to say on Twitter, and he's a fucking moron for saying it at that time. But guess what? If people were fired or not hired in esports for saying something fucking stupid, EG wouldn't exist. You'd have Huck dancing on a street corner. Idra would be selling hot dogs in New York City. I would be probably powerlifting my way to certain world fame, but still, most of us would not have a job. Like, it's so silly that people are like, well, you know, one time Alex gave a speech about how bad the language Orb used was, and guess the fuck what? What Orb said was fucking idiotic and absolutely terrible, and of course it offended Alex, it offended everybody, it even offended Orb. He kind of come out and says, like, well, I'm sorry, I've got anger issues. So, like, it's so weird that this is the storyline that we're talking about. It's not, the best foreign in the world's going to be brought onto the team that sends people to Korea to train if they want. We'll move them to every single tournament they could ever possibly want. We'll pay them the salary they actually deserve in a market where most people are underappreciated. We're going to see more Stefano than we've ever seen before if we sign Stefano. And to me, hallelujah, because guess what? We're going to have less tweets about Jews dying and more players kicking fucking ass on the biggest stage in the fucking StarCraft II world, which grows everything. But people want to type out, well, that's one time. Fuck you, man. Get the fucking stick out of your ass and start figuring shit out because this is a good day.
Trident.
Trident.
So obviously I just want to throw out there is that, you know, this will be or would be assuming – I think the speculation is that officially the Millennium contract ends in September. So basically post-MLG we'd get to find out which direction Stefano is going to go. For EG, if this happens, this would then be Thorzane, Suppy, and then Stefano within a span of about 2 months, maybe three. It does definitely make it a very hard point to argue that EG has one of the most kind of robust and prolific.
Deepest pockets,
yeah,
biggest budget.
No, I wouldn't even say that. I would just say more like the personalities and the you know, the team itself. I mean, what's your guys' opinion on that? I guess I've never asked you, like, well, you know, I know you've always been proud of, like, the people that have been a part of EG, and EG has expanded quite a bit in the past few months.
I think from, like, a outsider's perspective, I think EG, without a doubt, does the best job of promoting their players. And I think that's something that the sponsors have to be really interested in, specifically, like, all the commercials that have been done with Kingston. Meanwhile, promoting their sponsor and specific players on the team, I think, is a brilliant idea. Other sponsors have to look at those type of commercials and the exposure that a company like Kingston is getting from the team. And, I mean, it just looks great, right? So what sponsor wouldn't want to hop on board and get involved in something like that? And the way they're kind of putting the whole thing together is, like, bringing these super talented, marketable players onto the team, which I think pretty much everyone on the team thus far is. And they're just continuing to add to that roster of super talented, marketable players and continuing to promote them through the sponsors. So it's just like a giant network of viewership, total views, sponsors, all intertwined, and they just keep growing it larger and larger. And it seems like none of the other teams are catching on or are just so far behind that they're just unable to compete, unable to hold on to their players or pay them what they want or deserve, as Jeff said. I mean, It is, they have a unique advantage in the market where a lot of other players are being underappreciated or undervalued, and it seems like they have the financial backing to make them think twice about their current situation.
Yeah, people complain about, like, an EG monopoly, but the reason this is happening is because we're doing everything good. Like, EG has figured out how to market players and how to bring more money into the community, how to get us out there, how to pay us the money. You know, they pay us more than any other team could. So that's really good for us. And they're able to bring in the money to support that. Just everything they do is about improving things for everyone. And the only other the only organizations to get the short end of the stick are the other teams, and that's because they're not doing as good of a job as Ichi. So if anything, they should encourage them to actually learn how to approach things instead of just slapping a tag on players and sending them to one or two events a year and not paying them enough money. Like, Ichi is the ones. This is what pro gaming needs to be. This is what we need to be for our industry to be successful, is figuring out how to use everyone's talents as well as possible and how to sell it to the people who are actually interested in the industry and keep getting more and more people interested in the industry. So, like, everything about this is good except people being butthurt because they want to be butthurt.
Yeah. It's not even fair to address, like, a lot of the complaints. Like, that kind of stuff, like, yeah, you know, we are kind of the Yankees of StarCraft. We've kind of embraced that. I mean, it's really hard for us not to, but by the same token, the Yankees are loved and hated for their success, but because they're so wild, they're much more wildly successful than, like, the Minnesota Twins or something like that. They kind of they have the ability to go out and get what they want, and it's pretty obvious by now that our team is trying to be the number one foreigner team. Like, yes, we have Puma, yes, we have JYP, but the majority of our roster is non-Korean. We want to have a Korean presence, and we want to have a non-Korean presence. And for me, like, stepping outside of EG, that's really fucking exciting. And if you want to have the best foreigner team, you have to have Stefano on your team. I mean, what the shit? Right?
Yeah.
Is there anyone that's weirded out by that? Like, I would love to see an on-fire Idra Huck, Thor Zane, Stefano march down a GSTL aisle and do great stuff over there. You know, like, that's the kind of stuff we're trying to build towards and do. And that's the coming awesomeness, you know? So yeah. Who knows? I think it's a cool thing for us to try to do. And you know what? I'm like a growing, maturing aspect of this too, because you'll see me rant on the forums like, stop making fun of us for being so fucking awesome. And then on Twitter I'll be like, people are really mean about us signing up all the best players. But then I sit back and I go, wait, would we do it any other way? Like, would EG, like,
we should
publicly announce,
dear StarCraft community, we regret on this day to acknowledge that we've done the best in terms of business, and we're doing such a good job that we had the foresight to realize we don't need to hire good players anymore, because we don't want to hurt, you know, like, the people out there and shit, because we're trying to make a good team. So we're acknowledging the people on the forums. And you were right. We should stop signing the best players. We're just going to try to, like, you know, not do that now.
And then, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to imagine that world. I can't.
That's next week's announcement, obviously.
We are done signing players until the year 2014.
We have decided.
For the sake of esports.
Yeah. The best, like, model you can think, like, Team Liquid signs Tasia, and they're all like, oh, Team Liquid signed him before he was, you know, a big deal, and, oh, what a smart signing. No, no.
It was just after he won, ESV Cups.
He was 16 years old and on absolute fucking fire, not living in a pro gaming house in Korea, and everyone was talking about how amazing he was. But that's the image that Team Liquid has. EG, on the other hand, they signed Thorzane. Well, it's only because he won Stockholm DreamHack. No! No, it's because he's one of the best fucking players on the planet. He's been on fire in Europe. Like, we don't try to brand it any other way, but there's different things attached to it from the community. And I used to fight that, but lately I'm trying to do more of it where I just go, okay, yeah, we're going to sign Stefano, and he's going to stop winning tournaments because he's like, getting paid too much. And if anything's true, it's that Stefano's proven when he makes money, he stops making more money because he gets tired of the money. He doesn't like it as much as others.
This is why we're not going to sign any new players ever again.
After he won NASL, he was like, this is enough money for me. I'm fine. I don't need to play anymore.
Yeah, he did go to Korea and start practicing 10 hours
a day.
No,
we didn't do that. No, that's stupid.
We'll find out soon enough, because September's not that far away, ladies and gentlemen. So open up the phones for about just under half an hour or so.
Let's do it.
Yay.
Release the hounds.
Yeah.
Reach us on Skype, D TJ Wheat, telephone 909-581-8519. And we'll see what
oh my God, Greg.
Through.
What's up?
You just got tweeted by StarCraft for your birthday.
Really? Wow. By StarCraft?
Like the game?
Today is Internet's birthday. Will he celebrate by winning the WC? Well, of course, it's an advertisement for other things, but mention that it's your birthday. That's fucking awesome. Congrats.
Oh, that's funny. All right, let's take
the first Adam retweeted, yeah.
Let's take the first call. We got area code 323 on the horn. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi, this is Justin from Berkeley. Happy birthday, Idra. You're the fucking man, dude. Keep
good
up
job.
The good work.
You can continue.
You may proceed.
All right, good stuff. Okay, so I'd like to preference my question with Minigun's comments on the NA server, how their players is relatively bad compared to the Korean server players. Why don't you think more North America team houses aren't located in places where you can get playable ping to the Korea server?
That's a really good question. I don't know. We're in Phoenix because it's cheap, but it has really terrible international routing, and that's a bad thing.
Okay.
Team houses should be more conscious of that.
What Greg meant to say.
Do you think the cost would be after with the practice environment, though?
Hang on. This is the actual answer from Greg. I'm just getting it. Greg just texted to me. All right, Greg, I'll say it for you. Yeah, that's fine. Team houses are a fiscal difficulty for a organization. It's basically paying for the rent and the housing of a large group of people that you're already traveling everywhere. So if you can be near an international airport hub like Phoenix International Airport, great. If you happen to have a studio from your CEO down the street where you can actually produce content that then justifies the ROI for your house, that too would also be good. Should there have been considerations for having a better connection to Europe? Yes. But internally, I'm telling you that even if we had a better connection, I think the Muslim, Idra, and Huck would still find a way for it to not be okay enough.
No, I was staying in Toronto for a while. I played in Europe the whole time.
I was just trolling, guys. I don't actually have an answer for that. But yes, more houses should do that. Like a lot of people throw out the thing like, why don't you just build a house in Korea? That's where the best training is. Well, that would be the hardest place to fly your players out for your internationally based sponsorship important tournaments like MLG. So we would do our travel budget like in month one, flying our players out of Korea to the United States. And then domestically, like I said, the hub is important, the studio is important, but could we put a house, like Greg was talking about, in Toronto or, you know, on the East Coast somewhere where we have a better connection to Europe? Sure. But I guess that would be, like, more expensive real estate, very difficult again. I don't know, maybe in future considerations that kind of stuff gets more done.
I think just your thought about the flights and all the stuff that goes in, you know, like, yeah, being on the Korean server, being able to train there hypothetically on paper, probably the best way you could do it. But when you do look at all the things that InControl mentioned, even though he said he didn't have an answer to it, he kind of answered it during his little troll in that it is expensive. That's, yeah. You know, that alone, like, especially for a fostering Western team with mostly English-speaking sponsors, like, that makes sense to me. And you don't see a whole lot of teams necessarily picking up and just heading over there, I think, for that exact reason.
I mean, if you look at the programming houses that have sprung up, Quantic is in California, Complexity is in Texas. None of those locations are based upon their connectivity to Europe or Korea. It's about where their home base is. Like, Quantic is California-based, Complexity is Texas-based. That's what makes most sense for those teams. Hopefully in the future, when we're talking about gigantic, enormous budgets, the consideration is less like cost and business related and more about getting those players the best training ever. But that's also part of the reason why these teams have partnered themselves to Korean organizations so that we can send Huckage or Thorzane or something like that to Korea to train. But Complexity, they've bounced around with partnerships as well as Quantic. Like, obviously, where you train is very important, but with these teams spending precious dollar like that, what's more important is making everything fiscally responsible.
Carl, does that answer your question?
Can Idra expand on that a little bit more? I'd like to hear his thoughts.
Well, what I said and what Jeff said are pretty much the same thing. He just elaborated and made it sound better. Like, it is really expensive to run a team house, and that's something that everyone has to consider. And, you know, places with better internet, better, like, close to good airports, better living conditions, so those places are more expensive just because they're better places to live. So it costs more to put us there. and there's already a ton of expenses to running a team, and this is a new industry. Even in all our sponsors, you know, we still have a budget. We still have to make things fit into that. So there's priorities that have to be looked at.
Yeah, where else can you get, like, cheap housing to support, you know, 8 to 10 individuals at a scale? I mean, imagine that in, like, New York or, like, Boston.
Sorry, Bryce is retarded.
He has a tough time picking up his knees. Things are harder.
All right, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Oh, my gosh, the whole house is falling apart.
We have a noisy house.
It's Bryce. Built with trash, but let me tell you, the rent is cheap. All righty. Let's take... let's take another one. Let's take someone I think we've never taken before. I'm not sure how you actually say this.
Isn't that like every call except for
Scolarion? Scolarion?
Yo.
Hello, yo. Did I say it right? Scolarion?
Scolarion. Wow, I didn't expect to get through it all.
Scolarion. Scolarion.
It's like Gozer the Gozerian.
Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up, man?
Well, first of all, happy birthday to Idra, of course.
Good job. You can continue.
Thank you.
All right, so my question is, I took a break from StarCraft II for about, like, 2 months, and I came back, like, after the Queen patch, and...
Good times.
Like, every Terran is like, Zerg is so broken, but then I go on the ladder, I'm like, oh my god, I can't beat Terran. So, my question to Idra is, how do you currently open ZVT? Because I know there's, like, the 4 Queen versus the 6 Queen build. And at what time do you generally take gases with either of those openings?
That's actually something I'm struggling with, because NA Terrans don't tend to, I don't know, be particularly good at attacking. But then if you watch VODs or replays of Korean players, and to a lesser extent European players, they have much, they have just developed new timings to take advantage of some of the Queen builds. So I'm like trying to compensate for that without actually playing people who know how to do it. So it's iffy. I feel like, I forget who was doing it a lot at actually, it might have been Johnny Rico. I think I was seeing him do it. He would open with 4 queens and double gas on 36, get speedling, and then take his third base around 44 supply. That seems to be pretty solid in general. It gives you good creep spread, good defensive capabilities. It gets you speedling in time for mass hellion run-bys, and then he would wall off with his double evo. So I think that might be a pretty decent go-to. But the real answer is there's 5 or 6 different builds that all have different weaknesses and strengths. Some are greedier than others. Some give you better creep spread. Some give you faster tech. Some have more aggressive potential, like any kind of roach opening allows you to go into roach baneling really easily. So I think the important thing is just to mix it up and have a good feel for your opponent, realize what they're usually doing and try and take advantage of that, or just keep them off guard strategically. Like, there's a lot of different builds that can transition pretty well into the mid game, so you should get comfortable with all of them. But I feel that 4 queen speedling before third base, but still a relatively early third base, I think that's like a good go-to, a good reliable one.
All right. At what time do you generally tend to take gas with that 4 queen build, though? Is it like...
Double gas at 36. Double gas at 36.
36. All right. That's a great answer. Thank you, love.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Peace.
All right. Cheers.
Dude, this guy's got the best name ever, man.
Scalion?
Stan Gorkin? Are you serious? Nice. Stan, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. God, Stan.
Holy shit, I got through.
Hello, yes, you did. Hey. What's up?
So, I have a question to...
don't you mean you have something to say first?
Happy birthday, Idra.
Oh, man, I can't get your ass. I'm not saving the next
That's
guy,
That's
kind
of grudging, though.
I saw his life.
I'm not saving the next guy.
Yeah.
All right.
I figured he'd be the kind of guy who wouldn't actually want to hear that. But...
Figured wrong, sir.
All right, figured so wrong. I have a question for Idra, I guess, in control, in a way. How does Zerg beat Toss right now? Like, I'm a Zerg, and I just can't win ZVP to save my life.
Incoming... Funny Greg comment.
All these patch Zergs calling
I actually don't mind CVP that much right now.
Horrible.
Well, that's when you know it's bad. I mean, in general, man, like, how does a Zerg beat a Protoss?
Yeah, I know. It's like such a...
Just be willing to be really abusive. Just like, get the Brutal or Infestor army and never attack and make 70 spines.
Let's do it a little bit more productive. What's the one thing you're having a really tough time with as opposed to, like, Protoss?
Good call. Call him. Stan?
Honestly, it just seems like if I try and attack, they just defend with force fields and a couple of cannons. If I try to be really defensive, they just get their big late-game army. The Mothership, the Archons, the High Templars, Stalkers.
So, right. I'll tell you what. I'm going to answer the question exactly the way it sounds like the path we're going down. You just got to make roaches and then infestors. And after the roaches have killed some of the Protoss stuff, you then replace it with Lings. And after the Lings have killed some of the Protoss stuff, then you go Broodlords. And with the Broodlords and Infestors, you kill the Protoss.
Science.
That's actually it.
Scientific formula for defeating Protoss.
So you're saying you have to be aggressive, but at the same time be teching and expanding, then make the spines so they can't just counter and kill you?
If they counter you, you need to build spine crawlers. And infestors.
I feel like I'm being made fun of so hard right now.
No, not even.
Sound advice is just really basic, because the question was, how do you kill Protoss? So we can't go super in-depth on it, because, I mean, Greg doesn't have this secret build. He's like, all right, listen, caller. Here's the build. And then he has, like, this build down to a minute that kills Protoss.
The secret is you don't kill Protoss. You just wait for them to get bored and, you know, get out.
There it is. Greg was delayed, but...
Ah, it's true. It's like a terrible way to play, but it's actually really strong. I just hate it.
It's good.
I guess I wasn't very specific. But, yeah, I guess what I meant is kind of what you said is, do you have to play, like, aggressive, defensive, tech-oriented?
I think a little bit of both. Like, at certain points in the game, like when Jeff was referencing trading Lings and Roaches and then kind of teching into Broodlords later, I think it's a really good idea. Like, if you can deny the Protoss third and shut down their third while losing the least amount of units possible.
Depending on how aggressive you are, you can go mass Roach and Ling and actually try to attack the Protoss, or you can pretend they are being aggressive and switch faster to Infestors. And once you hit Infestors, you should become more passive, but you can trade out energy from Infestors while still retaining the Infestors themselves for Protoss units while you're sitting behind a wall of Spinecrawlers and teching the Broodlords, or as Greg says, waiting for the Protoss to get bored.
All right. Stan, thank you for your call. Right. Hopefully,
thanks a lot.
Hopefully you unlock some knowledge there. If anything, you found something out about yourself. I think you took it like a man. Well done.
Actually, I figured Greg was the type of person who wouldn't want to hear happy birthday. Like, who the fuck doesn't want to hear happy birthday?
It's Eric,
like,
oh, Greg would.
The most basic.
Eric, 313, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call, Mr. Wheat. And let me say first and foremost, happy birthday to you, Mr. Field.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right on. Serious business.
If you trolled after this, my mind
dude, I'm just waiting for, like, the power level 9000 troll. It's coming.
What's up, caller? Oh, there it is.
He just hung up.
Damn it.
That was a good call. I like that. I wish more callers were
like
that.
I think he actually said something, but we just didn't hear it.
What's up,
We just didn't hear it.
Taylor says hi.
All right.
We are doing the whole show. You're like staring at 6,000 people, but I just wanted to show you that.
And of course, chat.
Her reaction's so good.
It's only
5,500, honey. I lied. I'm sorry.
Okay. Before we say go, let's call.
We got time for one more.
Yes, we do. This is an unknown phone number. Could be calling from fucking Mars, man. Curiosity handed him a fucking cell phone. He's calling in. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. Yep, it's going to take 14 minutes. Adria. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Happy birthday, Adria. What's up, caller?
Yeah, I'm just – you guys were talking about the booths earlier, and I'm just wondering – is it the cost that's prohibitive? And do you know, beyond just the speculative nature, how much it actually costs to set up the booths.
Okay.
And that's the only question I have.
First of all, good question. Second of all, your opener had me 100% certain that you were going to troll immediately after. Yeah, I'm just wondering. Like, I thought you were going to go, like,
he got the dumbest piece of shit you've ever seen.
Look, you have, like, Jeff. It's like the rookie cop. Like, every little sound is just making him, like...
I was ready to go. The booths are ungodly expensive. I don't know if it's because I'm sheltered or if this is going to blow everyone else's brains away as well. But the, like, the LOL booths that were at MLG or something like that, they were upwards of $200,000 or something ridiculous, each one. And transporting them is extremely expensive as well. So there's no question about it. There's a big reason why a lot of these leagues are moving away from those prohibitive costs. While they are nice, and I think in a perfect world, if money wasn't a question, every league would have booths. I think they would say they look the best. The StarCraft nerds care the most about booths. One of the stealing storylines when you don't have a booth is people are like, oh my god, I don't have a booth. Like, it's so stupid that they're not doing that. Like, it detracts from the overall goodness of the tournament, so they'd rather people just shut up and they had a booth there, so they're not talking about it. They put the Protoss emblem on the front of the WCS Australian booth, and it got its own thread. Weird things like that, but they're so ungodly expensive, which means one of the best jobs in the world for people that are listening, if you're like a 12-year-old out there, if Mini Wheat's listening, Aria Stemkoski's listening... Build booths. Build booths and laugh as you make millions.
All right. How about this in control? I'm going to go out. I'm going to buy a refrigerator for $900. Okay. I'm going to take the refrigerator out of the box and put it in my garage because I want to keep some drinks cool. I'm going to take said box, cut out some windows, go to Menards, grab some screen to like put over the side of it. And then maybe just put a speaker that just, like, plays, I don't know, Gangnam Style or something in there, like, nonstop, and then present it as the $950 booth solution.
Worst case scenario, you end up with an Indiana Jones nuclear safe house, so, can't go wrong.
I don't know. I think the windows invalidate that. Otherwise, it would be nuclear.
No.
The windows, they're a weakness.
All right.
Well, so, like, I think we kind of tried to do that with IPL3 on our first booth runaround, but we tried to cut costs on transportation by assembling the booth there on stage, which was just an absolute nightmare.
I've got some extra parts according to this fucking instruction that we got.
It was ridiculous.
Just so get the booths up on stage.
Then also,
go ahead.
Not having the booth set up beforehand and having all the lighting figured out. We also had to like figure out all the different lighting angles and where to put the lights inside the booth on site. So I'm not sure what the total cost was. I don't think it was on the order of $200,000, but it was something ridiculous, and it was just absolute headache for everyone on production. So
you can save money. And since we're sharing horrible booth stories, I was previously employed by NESL Season 1. We have, not to one-up pain user, but this is the king of terrible booth stories, okay?
Uh-oh.
So you can have the $150 or $200,000 ones, whatever the fuck they were, those gigantic, and that's why they were so expensive, the gigantic booths for the LOL, because it had the whole squad of five people sitting there. Or, and I love Russ, owner of NASL, he's obviously graduated very far from this, so hopefully he chuckles too. This is back when we made silly mistakes. He employed a carpenter to make his first booth. They built it, and it got delivered, like, the day before NESL Finals. It looked like something that you would put in your backyard for your daughter. But seating-wise, okay, this is my favorite part. When Chef got to the booth, Chef is uber polite, super nice guy, and he's kind of like Machine in the sense that, like, you could sit Machine down, and he would talk to anything and anyone for however long it takes to talk to him. Same thing with Chef. Like, Chef is the most accommodating, polite guy in the whole world. He sits down and he looks at the booth and he's like, okay, you know, like, how do I get inside of it? Like, what do I... And they're like, oh, you're just, you know, it's like a booth. They open the door and he's like, yeah, there's no room for me in there. Like, I can't actually get in there. And they're like, oh, sure you can. Sure enough, what ended up having to happen is it was so cramped and tiny in there. And this is not about Chef. This is how bad the booth was. Chef had to wheel himself in backwards and then with the aid of the stage crew, wheel turn him around, like cramming his knees, and then he was in the booth. And that's how bad the booth was. Not really soundproof.
Did he play like that?
Yeah, he played like that.
Brutal, man.
It was like a prison. It was like some kind of weird prison. And then July, same thing. July just kind of walked up to it and started laughing. And because he doesn't speak any English at all, so obviously he just had to kind of like sign, this is fucking stupid. Like, this won't work. But they went through with it, and everyone somehow made it work. And that was the worst. I mean, did that booth cost $150,000? No. Probably cost like $150.
So there you go. Caller, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Have a good one. Yeah. All right, take care. All right, take our final caller here. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Goat Lust. Goat Lust.
How are we, ladies?
Pretty good.
Is that what you say?
Yeah, happy birthday, Greg.
Thank you.
What's up, buddy?
Having a good time, are ya?
Oh, yeah.
Can't you tell? Holy shit.
So excited?
Poe is getting ready.
This is
your
favorite time of the day, eh?
Yeah.
These call-ins.
Oh, yeah. The call-ins are the highlight. I'm so happy I got to have those on my birthday.
So what's up, buddy?
All right. So all you guys have got plans to, I guess, stay in esports for at least a while. And I'm just wondering, are there any particular goals that you think you've got that you would like to achieve, like, before you, you know, bow out of esports?
Mine's always been to win a major tournament with, like, CODES, or now, I guess you have to add in the Kespa players as well. But, like, the good Koreans, a bunch of the good Koreans, because I've won, like, IEM and stuff, and that had Koreans at it, and Puma is obviously ridiculously good, but there's only four or five Koreans there. I only had to go through two of them to win it. So win, like, an MLG championship or an IPL if they have a good lineup, or maybe a DreamHack if they have a good lineup, just a big tournament with a bunch of good Koreans in it.
Pain user?
A current goal of mine would definitely be to cast on a major stage alongside, like, Kisses and Artosis, Paulo, whoever, with some of my other favorite casters on a major stage, like a BlizzCon or, like, a WCS championship or something like that. We've done IPL. That's awesome. But something along those lines, for sure.
And Control?
I would like to one day actually defecate on a hater. I would like to drop trow. Of course, this follows like some kind of jubilant event, some kind of good accomplishment. Like, I'm imagining like an MLG stage, and I just beat MC, and I come running out of the booth, and I pull a hater up out of the audience, and I sit them down, then I turn around. And I just poop on him. And I think that would be, because, you know, like an angry tweet or flipping the bird, that people do that. Greg's been flipping people off for 10 years. That doesn't do shit. But to actually shit on a hater, I think that would change the world. I think that'd be my best chance to get StarCraft to go super mainstream. You know what I mean? And that's not even a piss joke.
A viral video that gets 19 million hits does not necessarily mean StarCraft 2 mainstream. Be like, hey, you see a guy shit on man? It's like, yeah, I saw it 5,000 times. I don't know how I could top that. There's no goal I could possibly have that would be better than shitting on a hater. I mean, honestly, I don't know.
Mainstreaming.
Honestly, I just hope I'm 50 and still doing this. So I can load up episode 50 of Inside the Game and I can laugh a little bit. Because I'm not getting any younger. And I'd like to stick around for a while. So I don't know. I mean, I just want to be around for a while. You know, I just want to keep doing what I do and hope that I keep loving it. And that's it. And that's my goal. If it stays that way, then I'll keep at it. But
also, I get the feeling that for the majority of us, And for me personally, esports has been like a lifelong endeavor. It's something that I picked up when I was like 11 and just haven't put down since, and I don't think I ever will. So like, I don't know. I don't really have like a bow out point. I think I'll always be involved in one way or another, whatever that may be. Whether on the back end or the front end, behind the scenes, on stage, whatever. It's just something that I think I'll be involved in for a really long time. That's something I love.
I mean, my actual answer is kind of like a hybrid between basically what Painters just said and what DJ Weed said. Like, yeah, it's no mystery. My goal used to be like I'd like to come away with this with a major win. And brutally honest, I think that's setting the bar really fucking high. Obviously, I'm going to try as hard as I can, but it's probably not realistic. So I'm just... Like, every day, I try to, I don't know, I could never imagine myself doing anything else, so DJ Weed's always been kind of an inspiration in that way, because I really get the sense that that's exactly what he's doing, and part of what's really cool about that is that, and you know, I feel weird talking about you with you here, Weed, but you weren't able to always make your career esports, you know, and I'm lucky enough to have been in a place where it seems pretty feasible, and I've never known the path you've taken where you had to work your fucking ass off to support a family and do stuff while keeping esports as like a back burner passion that you had to split your time between. So I don't know. I think one of the things I've always talked about on my stream and stuff is that as fortunate and as lucky as I am, I want to try and make this more accessible to more people that are coming up in the world below me so that they can actually enjoy this as well. But then also, I feel like I have an obligation to work as hard as I possibly can to make this work because it's exactly what I want to do, and I'm not alone. I mean, half the hate that I get, understandably, is people like misinterpreting and saying, you're so privileged, and I would be there, I would kill someone to be where you're at. But they then take the next step and think that I'm not thankful for that. So my goal is to show that I am thankful, and in fact, I'm working hard to make this possible for other people, too.
That, and I've got about 6 more versions and or iterations of Mini Wheat that I've got to get through here pretty soon. And I mean, the first one's going pretty well, guys, but we think we can perfect the formula. So it's you know.
Aw, Dad.
As he's over so, there, like,
hold on.
People in TSQ.
So, Golas, yeah. I was talking to all the guys in the Australian scene, and they were like, where's Golas? We all hear him on Inside the Game. He's a mystery out here. None of us know who this guy is. We've never seen him at an event. They're like, why is it Golas here? Where's Golas?
Well,
Where were you, man?
You see, Brisbane's actually a good 12-hour drive away.
You and, always say this.
You know,
everything is a 12-hour wave.
You know what? Yes, Golas, I'm going to learn the geography of Australia and call you out on this. Because right now, I think you're hiding behind the fact that you know we don't know Australia from shit. Like,
there were tons of people from Brisbane there at the WCS tournament. There were a bunch.
So there were kangaroo trains there, is what you're saying.
although, would you classify yourself as a Bogan?
A what?
No,
a what?
Fuck no, not me, mate.
What's that mean?
What the hell?
What is that?
It's like a popper slash like.
What is a popper?
Hold on, let Goatless explain what that is.
No, a bogan is like,
that's who drinks a lot.
No.
Anyhow. I had a few plans actually. To go with some gentleman and one of his friends to drive down, but there was a bit of an issue with some ticketing shit because you know how they released all the tickets online.
Yeah.
And
sold out in like 15 minutes, right?
11.
Yeah. So those two guys didn't actually get one of those, so they were just like, we can't really justify going down if we don't know if we're going to be let in. So, yeah, that plan sort of fell through.
Dude, you could have grabbed me. I would have let you in. Get out of here. The Australian community would have welcomed you with open arms.
You're like the Batman of Australia, man.
Right? Anyways, you were sorely missed, and people were asking about you, and I didn't know what to say.
I know. It's kind of humbling.
You have to be
we
a
get
mystery
tweeted all
and be
the
like,
time.
Oh, he's here. Whether or not you see him is another question, but
yeah, right.
He's here.
Yeah, all right, guys. So, yeah, I was there.
Yeah, there you go.
You just
my theory is that
was.
You're not actually Australian. You're like...
he's like in the deep south.
You're some comedian.
Goatless is actually HD, believe it or not.
He's what?
Is actually HD.
Yeah.
So he really
was
there.
That's how he is. Taylor, you never knew. Oh, my God, this whole time. Anyway.
Did they call him HD.
HD?
That's what everybody called it. Like, people were coming up there like, and he's was like Vietnamese, right? So he's like linguistics are not there. So people would literally come up and be like, HD. And he just like wouldn't acknowledge them at all. He had no idea people were addressing him. It was hilarious.
So pain user, did you eat a meat pie while you were over there?
A what? A what?
A meat pie. Did you have one?
A meat pie?
No, I tried kangaroo though. I had a kangaroo
really?
Steak. Yes.
They eat kangaroos?
Yes, they
that.
Eat kangaroos. That'd be like us eating bald eagles, right? It's just like
what
doesn't
the fuck?
Compute. Was they it good? Eat kangaroos and it was delicious.
What did it taste like?
It was like
chicken.
Have you no.
You can't
have
say
you ever
that.
Had like a New York strip steak? Yeah. Like the stringy, like kinda tender part of a part cut
it
of
had a
part.
Kick to it.
No, it was good though. It was really good. I was surprised. Who was it? Legionnaire was sitting next to me, and he was just grubbing on what I thought was a steak. And then he was like, "Anybody want to try my kangaroo steak?" And I was like, "You're kidding, right? Like, you just..."
He was probably trolling you.
No, he's dead serious. Like, it was on the menu.
No,
like,
he's just a good troll. Okay.
they eat kangaroo out there. It's kind of nuts.
No, we do eat kangaroo out here. It's all right. We got a lot of them around to fucking kill, so you know, got to put them to some good use. There's actually a shit ton of them out here,
like
more than there are people.
Go less in Brisbane, like, or is it Melbourne? I'm not sure, but you hunt toads. You'll go toad whacking with golf.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
You're
yeah,
like
that's
the crag people from Song of Ice and Fire.
No, like, literally, like, they're encouraged to go toad hunting because it's, like, a foreign species that
yeah,
is
it's
prop-
actually kind of fucking disgusting.
Over.
Those cane toads.
Is that what they're called?
They fuck with the local ecosystem. Not good for those goannas and shit.
Why? Do they kill them, or...?
Well, the thing is...
they eat all the bugs?
There's, like, these big-ass lizards. They're called goannas, and there's all sorts of stuff like that around here.
You're trying to say iguana?
Awesome
no, goanna, I think.
I thought
yeah,
it was iguana.
No, it has to be iguana.
I don't know.
Yeah, you can call it what you want.
Try and
but,
tell us what you're trying to say.
But the thing is, they sort of eat frogs, but... They don't really know that the cane toads are poisonous, so they get fucked on when they eat one.
Get fucked on is the Australian way of saying
that,
die.
Like, what is my imagination when you say get fucked on is that like you suddenly find these iguanas like inside out, like I don't know what that means, but they trip really hard and then they just die is what I think
yeah,
happens.
Yeah.
So do you have like iguanas like holding up liquor stores and stuff? Like I mean, are they doing stuff they shouldn't be doing when they lick these toads?
Well, first they have to look and make sure there's no toads in this store, but then they actually bust in.
It's crazy.
Got them.
Goanna. Oh, someone posted a picture.
Of a goanna.
Oh, I don't click
everywhere?
Links anymore.
Are these everywhere?
Well, they're fucking I don't know if you'll see many
that
when you're actually
creepy.
In the city, but as soon as you go out, you'll definitely see them around, and they'll hang around campgrounds and stuff all the time, like eating scraps and shit from people. They can
see paintings
that
they do have homeless
they spend
people.
A lot of time
it's
around
pretty
people.
Much. I mean, it's like a small dinosaur. Really.
The goannas.
All right.
Those
right,
things look pretty vicious, man.
Yeah, they look scary.
Goat Lust,
raccoon.
Thank you for your call, dude. Great question.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Have
a good
one.
Man.
Badgers.
Happy birthday,
watch out for those frogs, man. Don't lick them. They're poisonous.
Later, Goat Lust.
Right. It's a known fact that the safest group of people to make fun of is homeless people because they have no way
How are they going
to
know?
They actually don't know.
They're not on the interwebs. That's actually a crazy concept. Imagine life without the internet.
Nope. That and it, well, I'm not even going to.
And life without a home. Yes, the internet would suck, but you know, one of those necessary things to surviving, actually.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've been without a home for a while, but I've always had, like, friends and family to take care of me. So I guess homeless and familyless. Yeah. Homeless and familyless. It's a vicious combo.
I'll just bite my tongue on this one. Guys, let's say our wrapping thoughts, final thoughts, whatever. I almost said arguments, but then it seemed really weird coming off of the whole homeless conversation. Mm-hmm. Thought I'd avoid that word. Pain user, we'll start with you.
I'm really sad to see Check 6 go. It's an organization that's been around since I was first getting into esports, so it's kind of weird that, like, would have made more sense to me if maybe the StarCraft II division had disbanded, but, like, Check 6 went to carry on and eventually was going to recreate the StarCraft division with some new talent or something like that. But just to see all of management kind of just pew, 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 and just hop onto different teams, and the way it disbanded, everything was so quick, just like a stack of cards, everything just came down. So really sad about that. It was fun while it lasted. I had some great friends on the team, so that sucks. But I hope you guys figure things out, and I hope you come back stronger one day. Other than that, thanks everybody for watching. Thanks to all the viewers out there. Happy birthday, Greg. I hope you have something awesome planned tonight. Hope you guys have some fun.
Barbecue.
Amazing. Speaking of birthdays.
Kangaroo?
I wish. That's the only thing that could make this place better.
The Australian, like, organizers for the WCS Australia brought Tasteless this giant Protoss Mothership birthday cake.
Really?
On his birthday. Yeah, like on stage.
Did he know what that was?
Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah, he did. He actually...
Jesus, Phaser.
I'm sorry, man. You just caught me. He knew what it was. He had a candid moment on stage receiving cake. But yeah.
Arcosis, what is this?
I totally agree. It must be a mothership. Anyway. Oh, man. Oh, thanks for that, Jeff. That was great. Please follow me on Twitter. I'm at PainUser. And huge shout-outs to the Australian guys at Blizzard_ANZ on Twitter and at ACL Pro on Twitter. Those guys were awesome. You guys, it was like top five esports events for me, no doubt about it. And you guys were all working for free. You were working your asses off. And I really, really appreciate it, especially the guys who were supporting the casters, getting us like tea and food and stuff. You guys were Johnny on the spot, and like, I assume some of
Johnny
you were
Johnny on the spot.
Yeah, Johnny on the spot. You never heard that?
Nope. Is that a racist joke?
No, jeez. Was that a religious joke? It's like, I'm out. Anyway, I'm outie. Glad to be back though. I was down under last two Tuesdays, flying on planes, and my plane ride home from Australia was literally the worst thing imaginable. Jeff, I know you probably don't have too much fun on planes, but it's literally the worst. Yeah, like, it's what I imagine hell to be like, is just the interior of a plane.
Tiny seat?
Yeah.
With
a 14-month-year-old baby.
Ooh. Ooh.
Losing its gourd.
You know what, guys? Let me tell you the best solution for that shit. Alright? You ready for it?
Headphones?
The best solution for a crying baby on a plane is to just fucking have one. Because your ability to zone that shit out is amazing. Like, I'm like, wow, I actually don't give two fucks that baby is screaming. This is awesome. That guy is pissed as fuck right in front of me.
Like, the whole plane was losing it. Like, our whole section, everybody was getting all anxious. People started ordering each other drinks. on a plane. They're pretty expensive.
None of them have kids. See that.
Anyways,
that is the worst. But I get a headset and play DS, man. That's what I did.
Oh yeah,
you just have to stare at the baby. If you look angry enough, they'll stop.
Oh, Greg.
This baby, Greg.
You haven't faced the final boss babies, but I'll tell you what.
Final boss babies.
My flight from Sweden. Some jackass was bringing their like little yipper over from Sweden. I don't know how that's legal, but the whole time it sat in a cage at their feet and just went ah, hey, yeah, and everyone just kept like
dude,
looking around.
It was like
Poa in cage form.
Boom, boom, ma'am. I'm gonna throw the fucking dog out the goddamn plane. Like
I have
we're
a
gonna
lot
find
of
out at this exit door. Where I could.
Oh yeah, I have a lot of patience, but I went full old lady to theater where I just kept like. You know what I mean? Like this, and then I'd look away, and they go, air, air, and I would do the. So like little flip, flip, the. With my eyes, I'm saying. God damn it! Shut the dog up now! Like, I'll kill you all. I'll kill everyone to get to you. Like that's what I was saying.
Didn't
work though. The Wii technique is stronger. Like they were using their dog to counteract every baby in existence, so they didn't go fuck. They were invincible.
Oh shit! All right, we're doing wraps, Greg.
Like to thank everyone for watching. Hopefully everyone's going to come out to MLG Raleigh, meet us there, and watch us play if you can. Also like to thank EG and all our sponsors. Our title sponsor, Raid Call. They're a new addition. They're really fucking awesome. Also, Intel, Monster, SteelSeries, Kingston HyperX, Beyond Gaming, and Sapphire. Check us out at evilgeniuses.net for all the other ones. We're going to allow us to afford some
sponsor shout-out,
perhaps.
I think it's the first.
Nailed it.
Like,
you nailed it.
Boom.
Yeah.
There's
extra
like a
attention to Raid Call.
Monitors. I like, got all the sponsors listed. Nope.
No, that's the first thing we have to do when we join EG is memorize the list. That's where the curse actually starts. You spend so much time memorizing the list that you can't practice.
Yep. There's the new one.
Yeah. So, and thank you everyone for watching.
Hey, Jeff, we had with you.
Big shout out to Greg Idra Fields for his happy birthday today.
Oh, yes, and thank you to everyone wishing me happy birthday everywhere on the internets.
Woke up this morning, and one of the first things that I was greeted by was a, like, same-day shipping letter from his mother to Greg.
Actually, the internet gets to see this once.
Oh!
That was in the letter from my mom.
Mom
that's me as, like, a 2-year-old.
Oh. And then something went wrong.
Oh, great. Great. This hurts. This hurts.
We're going to barbecue tonight. Really excited about that. If you're in Phoenix, Arizona, you need to go to Bob's Barbecue. Not necessarily tonight. I'm not saying that. It's not an invite to everyone in Arizona. But it's absolutely amazing. And Sir Scoots is having his birthday in Raleigh. We're going to go to the barbecue place for that. Couple of interesting things. Greg gets 1 year older, which makes the no GG thing that much more funny, I feel. But then also, Sir Scoots, this is like his centennial birthday, is it not? Is this,
I don't actually
is
know.
Is he 100 years old now, or?
Oh.
It's 200, a big birthday.
200, actually.
It is 200. I'm sorry. That's really offensive. Like, copy-paste the sponsor shout-out that Greg did, because he actually effing nailed it, Raid Call first, and then he went down the line. I hope Thorzane's paying attention somewhere. Coming for
question.
Yes.
Do you guys know if the raid, you guys picking up Raid Call as a title sponsor affects Fnatic in any way and their relationship with Raid Call, or is it just
that it makes them look more uncomfortable?
Right.
Raid Call is just dumping like millions of dollars into every part of esports, so it's more for
the
everyone.
The best way I can do this, okay? You've got twin sisters, okay? Now the twin sisters are dating this one guy. How am I going to do this? Right. And the girl's like, you know how this sometimes happens to twins? One of them is effing hot. She works out. She's like a yoga instructor. She really cares about her. The other one, to go the other direction, because she doesn't want to draw a comparison, went the opposite direction. We'll call her Fnatic for the purpose of this analogy. The one guy is dating both of these sisters, and it makes it awkward. Not only because it's one guy dating two girls, but some people do that in more freer societies. but because one of these girls is smoking hot, she's got it going on. She's a brick house. The other one is not. So that's the only way this gets kind of weird. To finish off my shout-outs, though, real quick, I will be at PAX Prime. We're going to be doing a booth there. It hasn't been announced yet, but they haven't told me to shut up, so I'm just going to say it. Me, Greg, and some others will be there, so do come say hi. I'll be also doing the Red Bull Zelnaga Challenge thing, which is where the audience gets to dictate who wins the tournament based upon things they vote in. This is my plea, guys. This could be my best opportunity to actually win a tournament. If you could help me out by just terrorizing the other players and paving the way for my certain victory, I will be very appreciative. and then also for Raw, I'm really excited. As always, people always ask, when's a good time to come say hi to us? I think I speak for most of the players on EG when I say that as long as we're not eating or have just lost, it's usually a good time to come say hi. Sometimes we'll politely say, no, I got to go to a match or something like that. But otherwise, hopefully if you're in the Raleigh area, we'll see you, and we'd love to interact and say hi. And please cheer us on. It's a big tournament. MLG does a great job. I'm really excited. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, guys, thanks for tuning in. 50 episodes. Hard to believe that we've actually knocked out 50 of these, but we have. Thanks to you guys for tuning in each and every week. And, of course, a big shout-out to our sponsors, SteelSeries, Monster Energy, and Kingston HyperX. I'll also be making a few appearances at PAX along with these guys at the Kingston HyperX booth. Doing some other things as well, including some panels. But that's 2 weeks away coming up, MLG Raleigh. See you all there. Hopefully you're going to visit if you're nearby. With that being said, also live on 3 tomorrow, Lee's going to join us, and we're going to ask him about those 8 mystery spots and find out what's going on there. But thanks for joining us, guys. We'll see you next time on another episode. We're out of here. Peace.
Bye.